attack, and that was after it had been reported by the Wall Street Journal and CNN. We'll look at that in more detail and hardly enter the Dragon. Where exactly is HMS Dragon? Back home, fears over the impact of cost of living. Chancellor Rachel Reeves earlier in the month.
This government will not tolerate price gouging, and I will be meeting with petrol retailers this week to raise concerns to get prices down at the pumps for all of our constituents.
Do you think the Chancellor has been for a drive lately as prices continue to soar? In other news, four ambulances set on fire in London in a suspected anti-Semitic hate crime, and... Prince William says he is religious, but he doesn't go to church. Do you have to go to church to profess your faith? Those stories and more after the 7 o'clock news on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 7 o'clock, a suspected arson attack on ambulances in North London is being treated as an anti-Semitic hate crime. Four vehicles belonging to a Jewish community group were set alight in Golders Green overnight. No injuries have been reported, but nearby homes have been evacuated. LBC's reporter Fraser Knight is at the scene.
The fires are out, but there's still a large cordon in place with police and firefighters investigating. We've also seen a video online which appears to show three hooded people walking up to the ambulances with a container of fuel and then running away afterwards.
Iran has warned that it will completely close the Strait of Hormuz if President Trump attacks the country's power stations. Donald Trump has threatened to obliterate the sites unless Tehran reopens the global shipping route tonight. Downing Street says Sir Keir Starmer and the US President spoke on the phone last night about efforts to reopen the strait. The Prime Minister is to chair an emergency COBRA meeting later to address the economic impact of the Iran war. Cabinet ministers as well as the Governor of the Bank of England are due to meet this afternoon. They're expected to discuss the impact on supply chains and energy security. The Housing Secretary Steve Reid insisted to LBC yesterday there's no need to ration fuel.
There is no question, as things stand, of rationing of any kind. People should continue to buy and use fuel just as they always have been doing. Indeed, in a couple of weeks' time, you, me, everyone else listening to this show is going to see their energy bills go down by an average of £120. That's locked in for 3 months. Whatever happens in the Middle East, that's happening because of the decisions this government took.
It's understood there'll be no funeral service for the Soham killer Ian Huntley. His family have reportedly declined a government-funded service out of respect for the two 10-year-old girls he killed in 2002. The 52-year-old died in hospital after he was allegedly attacked at HMP Frankland earlier this month. And Scotland has become the first part of the UK to screen babies for spinal muscular atrophy. The rare genetic condition causes progressive muscle weakness and affects around 70 babies in the UK every year. Doctors hope the pilot scheme could pave the way for wider testing. In the city, the FTSE 100 will reopen later at 99.18. It closed down 146 on Friday. The pound buys $1.34 and €1.16. LBC weather, cloudy for northern Scotland with some outbreaks of rain. Most of England and Wales will see some sunny spells through today. A high of 15 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
They were out there. Scammers trying to cash in on Priya's car finance claim. But what they didn't realize is...
unknown number.
She was ready to shut them down.
Not on my watch, scammers. Block.
Mummy, who are you talking to?
Oh, what no one loves. Right, come on, off we pop.
Don't rush, be wary. Protect yourself from scams. Check the facts with the FCA.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning. 3 minutes after seven, Monday the 23rd of March, the Iran conflict enters its fourth week and so many lines, not least it would appear. It took the government hours and hours to confirm that Diego Garcia came under attack, this despite it being reported both by the Wall Street Journal and by CNN and by the US Defense Department as well. Why the delay? Plus, is it true that Tehran could target European cities, with London being at the very outer edge? Berlin possibly under more threat, but possibly hitting London? Enter the Dragon, hardly. Does anybody know where HMS Dragon actually is? The government didn't seem to yesterday, and why it's taking so long. Plus, the hours are ticking down, probably late tonight, that supposed deadline ends, and then Trump saying he's going to wipe out Iran's power plants, despite that being a clear war crime. Much to discuss, and I've not even brought you back home yet, where there will be a Cobra meeting. That gives us all confidence, doesn't it? As the government says that they are keeping a close eye on the cost of living. And I remind you, Rachel Reeves said that she will not allow petrol companies, to increase the price of petrol. I went for a drive yesterday. Unfortunately, the car needed some fuel. You may as well want a ski mask when I had to pay for it. They're robbing us blind, and what are we doing about it? We'll look at that in more detail. In other news, a news breaking recently this morning.
Four ambulances belonging to a Jewish charity have been set on fire overnight in an anti-Semitic hate crime. I'm LBC's Fraser Knight in Golders Green.
I have a faith, but I don't go to church enough, and it doesn't really matter because I'm next in line to the throne. But it's what Prince William has reportedly said. Former chaplain to the late Queen Elizabeth, his grandma, Gavin Ashenden, says...
The difficulty with this is it feels strategic, it feels political. And the trouble is, I understand why they're doing that, of course I do. But if you're a passionate Christian, frankly, it's insulting.
Remember HS2, High Speed 2? You know the latest headline? They're going to have to slow the trains down because the rails can't take it. Or they're going to have to ship them to China to test them. I'm not even making that up. There's a week to go or a little bit more to April the 1st. That is a, quote, true story. How that has ever come about, we'll look at that. Plus... Pink Pony Club. I'm going to keep on dancing at the Pink Pony Club. A bit of a Roan goal for star Chapel Roan, as reportedly her security staff rather bully an 11-year-old girl who just wanted a picture or wanted to say hello. It turns out that the girl is the daughter of Jude Law. Confused? You should be. More on that. I'm struggling to keep up. More on that later in the show.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Pardon my language, but cover-up followed by cock-up, it would appear. Does the government actually know what's going on? And are they prepared to tell us? Why are we getting our news about the safety of British military personnel at a British military base? Why are we getting our news from the Wall Street Journal and CNN rather than the government? Why did it take 30 hours? Why don't they actually know where HMS Dragon is? Enter the Dragon. And what of that ticking deadline? That's not, of course, for the British government. Now, Sir Keir Starmer has faced accusations of a cover-up after failing to tell the public about that attack. The government finally admitting missiles had been fired at the base more than 30 hours after the attempted strike, and only after it had been confirmed by US officials and the media. Speaking after the attack, Foreign Secretary Yvette Cooper said the UK will continue to provide defensive support in the region and insisted we would not be drawn into a wider conflict in the Middle East.
We will provide defensive support against these reckless Iranian threats. But we have not been and we continue not to be involved in offensive action. And we want to see the swiftest possible resolution. As he's made clear, we will not be drawn into a wider conflict because we think we need to see as swift as possible resolution in the UK national interest, but also to support regional stability, security and the economy as well.
Israel briefed on the weekend. The attempted attack shows Iran's missiles could reach European capitals such as Berlin, Paris, and at the very outer edges, even London. But yesterday, senior cabinet minister on the round, housing community secretary Steve Reid, and let's face it, if you've got British military interests or assets under attack, you send out your housing secretary, don't you? I mean, why would you send out your defence secretary or your foreign secretary or even your home secretary? No, send out the housing bloke. Steve Reid insisted Israel's warnings were exaggerated. He told my LBC colleague Lewis Goodall...
That is speculation. We are perfectly capable of keeping the United Kingdom safe. And that's what we've done. Okay. Where there have been attempts to target British assets, as with Diego Garcia, they have failed. And they will continue to fail. We have one of the finest militaries in the world, and it keeps this country perfectly safe. Now, I'm not going to engage in speculation. I don't know why the Israelis may have said the things that they've said.
So they're wrong.
We are perfectly capable of keeping this country safe.
So let's turn to the idea of the capability of these missiles fired by from Tehran. Diego Garcia is 2,360 miles from Iran, Two missiles was fired. One was shot down by a US warship. We don't know where. The other reportedly failed after about 1,990 miles. Put this all in terms of reference for you. London currently stands broadly 2,700 miles from Tehran. That's from Tehran, by the way. And Iran is a big country. Berlin a little closer, 2,100. So what is the reality? Nicholas Williams is a former NATO and UK Ministry of Defence official, served as head of operations for Afghanistan and Iraq, and now a senior fellow of the European Leadership Network, and joins me now. Thank you very much for your time. Israel's briefing about these missiles, do you think it's a possibility or a little bit out on the outer edge that these missiles could target European cities? Good morning.
Yes, good morning. Well, I agree with you. It's... for the UK, it's a little bit out of the on the edge, but Iranian missile could conceivably hit London if it had a reduced payload. But who knows, and no one knows, how the Iranians' technology and missile program has developed in recent years. It's they've developed significant capabilities and focused on their missile capabilities to hit particularly Israel, but the region and beyond.
One thing we do know, Mr. Williams, is that Iran have launched attacks on Diego Garcia. Fortunately, they were not successful. What does that tell us? What does that specifically tell you?
Well, it specifically tells us that the Iranians had a plan in the event of an attack to hit US bases, British bases. You can see that in Cyprus. And anyone that they consider to be an enemy or participating in the attack.
The clock is ticking on the deadline set by President Trump, sometime late tonight, UK time. The wisdom or otherwise of such deadlines, in your view?
Well, I think that it's a foolish deadline because the Iranians will not budge. And they want to demonstrate their resilience and their ultimately their martyrdom. And the Americans, Trump, shouldn't be tied to a deadline which he may fail to meet.
You're not going to like my last question, but I'm going to throw it at you anyway, Nicholas, if I may. How does this all end?
How does it all end? I think in chaos and long-term economic chaos. But what you haven't asked is the Iranians can possibly reach us, but the Russians can reach us.
Give me a word on that then, if you would.
Well, the Russians have hypersonic missiles, or developed hypersonic missiles, which can reach London, and we don't have a defence for.
Ah, so that accord then possibly between Iran and Russia, that's where we should be focusing a degree of attention as well, as what you would say, sir.
Yes, the balance of power is shifting towards Iran and Russia in the Middle East.
Fascinating speaking with you. Thank you. Nicholas Williams was a NATO and UK Ministry of Defence official, serving as head of operations for Afghanistan and Iraq, and now a senior fellow at the European Leadership Network. Let's bring into the conversation a military bloke, Major General Jonathan Shaw, former Assistant Chief of the Defence Staff at the MOD, now consultant for MAST Security, joining me now. I wonder if I could, Major General, just get you to pick up a word on what you heard from my previous contributor there, that perhaps focus or our eyes need to, as much as we're watching Iran, we need to direct towards Moscow as well. Your reaction to that. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, indeed. And yes, I mean, I think the two wars are obviously connected. And that technology transfer is a scary prospect, if you want that. But it just shows the futility of relying on hitting the opponent and hoping that comes up with an answer. I mean, it's such an escalatory and unsatisfactory response. It terrifies me. But there we go.
In a related story, Sean Bell, the former Air Vice Marshal, says Britain had Bloodhound missiles to stop attacks during the Cold War, but defences have had such little investment that we don't have suitable defence systems now. Right or wrong in your view, sir?
Oh, I suspect it's absolutely right. I mean, I think the defence cuts we've taken since the Berlin Wall came down have hollowed us out. And I think that the housing minister that we've all heard on the news is optimistic and is deluding himself.
Is Israel right when they brief that these missiles from Tehran could hit Berlin, Paris or London?
I think you've got to be conscious here that the only winner in this war so far is Israel, and that Israel has absolutely no desire for a deal at all. Indeed, the only thing that the only justification I can come up with for why Israel and the United States launched this attack on Iran is precisely because they could see that a deal was forthcoming. We've had that, you know, and hence this war was described as an unnecessary war by a previous head of MI6, who said this is a completely unnecessary war. There were negotiations going on, and Jonathan Powell has confirmed this as well. So I think we just need to understand that Israel has a desire to keep this. They love forever wars, and this is the fundamental asymmetry between Israel and the United States. The United States hates long wars, and Trump particularly, but Israel loves long wars. You know, just mowing the lawn is their way of doing business. Just go in there and kill more people. That just suits their aims absolutely.
Lastly, the deployment of Royal Naval vessels to try and keep open the Strait of Hormuz. Defensive or offensive action in your view, Major General?
Well, there you go. That's the difficulty that you're in, particularly when you start using the justification of preemption, preemptive defence. You know, you take something out because it might be used against you. Well, funny old thing, you could actually turn that argument the other way around. We've got nuclear weapons which could wipe out Tehran, which therefore, under that law of preemptive self-defence, means the Iranians could be justified in attacking Britain. I mean, it's a nonsense argument, but you get the point. We're in very tricky water, and we try to distinguish this between the defensive and offensive. It's very, very hard to work out.
Enjoyed our conversation. Thanks for your time this morning. Major General Jonathan Shaw, former Assistant Chief of the Defence Staff at the MOD, now consultant with Mast Security. Later in the show, in a related story...
With concerns about Iran's missile capability and President Trump warning he'll obliterate their infrastructure, what are Iranians in the UK making of developments? I'm LBC's Henry Riley in Finchley.
Plus, later in this hour, HS2, the biggest white elephant since Dumbo. Now, they're going to slow the trains down. Yes, high-speed link 2, they will slow the trains down. It's not April the 1st, it's March the 23rd, and it's 7:16, and it's LBC News Headlines. Dominic Ellis.
A suspected arson attack on ambulances in North London is being treated as an anti-Semitic hate crime. The Prime Minister is to chair an emergency COBRA meeting later to look at the economic impact of the Iran war. And a man has become the first person to be charged under new laws banning football fans from entering a match without a ticket. LBC weather cloudy in northern Scotland with outbreaks of rain. Most of England and Wales will see some bright spells, a high of 15 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. In Golders Green, the Golders Green Road remains closed in both directions because of the ongoing investigation. Also, delays of about 3 miles now on the M25 clockwise, heading towards Junction 10 at the A3, and that's where a car's broken down and only one lane is open. Also, the delays on the M23 continue as well. Southbound, just after the M25 junction, a car's broken down, so one lane is closed for recovery. On the trains, the Mild May line on London Overground network is suffering with severe delays between Stratford and Clapham Junction, and between Stratford and Richmond, it's all down to a track problem. And on the Underground, Holland Park Station and Tufnell Park stations are both closed because of a shortage of staff.
This is LBC.
Need anything from Tesco?
Snacks and milk, love.
How about discounts on holidays abroad?
Don't forget fruit and veg for our school.
Free nappies for premature babies.
And the quiet hour in store to shop in peace.
Can I get £2.50 cinema tickets on Tuesdays?
We know you need more than just groceries from us. We do all this because every little helps.
Need anything from Tesco?
Oh, yeah, do you want to get some...
For further information, visit tescoplc.com/need-anything-from-tesco.
This is LBC. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app. Download it now from your app store.
If you were missold a home on a holiday park, holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive compensation. Text ADVICE to 78900.
Sorry to interrupt your day, but I've just been diagnosed with dementia and I'm going to need your help. I'll need help when I can no longer button a shirt or recognise my own family. My daughter will need help too. I worry this could ruin her life. And we will all need help to find a cure to end the devastation of dementia. I can't do this alone.
It will take a society to beat dementia.
Alzheimer's Society.
With over 50 years' experience, Fidelity can help you feel confidently invested. Make the most of your annual allowances by the 5th of April with our expert insights, excellent service, and wealth of investment options. For ISAs, pensions, or advice, go to fidelity.co.uk. Your capital is at risk. Terms apply.
My name is Chevy, and this is my NHS story. Over a couple of days, I was getting quite intense pain on the left side of my stomach. So I called my doctors and then was referred to the Eltham CDC. It was literally a seamless, stress-free day. There was no anxiety or worry.
The government is opening new community diagnostic centres, with many already available 12 hours a day, 7 days a week, so the NHS can be there for all of us when we need it. Find your closest one at gov.uk/NHS Fit for the Future. Available England-wide.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
20 minutes after seven, so much to unpack or unpick or drill into. John, you'll be the first caller on that. Let me quickly tell you some of the headlines that you're waking up to, or for some of you, you're going to bed to having put in your shift. The Daily Mail asks a very fair question, which we will ask of the government minister later in this hour. Why did the PM keep the public in the dark for 30 hours after the Chagos strike? Of course, the strike on Chagos Islands, Diego Garcia. The other chilling aspect, of course, is what it means at home. Now, there's a COBRA meeting taking place today to see what the impact will be on the cost of living. We'll send price of oil soaring, vows Iran, is the front page of the Daily Telegraph. Similar for The Guardian, Iran vows to target water sites. That's in the US. The US hits power plants, everything they can to disrupt the economy, of course, of the United States and its allies. And I, fuel price rises inescapable, pressure mounts to cap energy giants' profits. Onto the LBC app. And that also has the aspect of the oil price soaring. We are looking at that in more detail. The domestic side, very much in the next hour, we're going to be looking at that. And the front page of The Sun Online is the end of Ian Huntley. You remember the double child murderer. Burn in hell. No funeral, mourners, nor headstone for the killer. His ashes to be scattered in secret. None of his family expressing any interest to attend that. That's the front page, as I say, of Sun Online. John's in Birmingham. John, what aspect do you want to come to first of this story as regards developments on the weekend? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. If I was a school teacher for the government at the moment, I wouldn't even be giving them ungraded at the moment. Good Lord.
Right, go on.
30 hours. And we're on the verge of potentially a world war. How confident are you in Keir Starmer as leading us through that?
I'm afraid I'm not.
It's scary. Mm. The world issues, okay, they're happening, but for the decision making and what we've seen this government do, that's what scares me the most.
Let me put you two or three assertions, either from the housing secretary, and if you're on the verge of war, God knows you want your housing secretary. Housing secretary says we have the best military in the world. We can defend the United Kingdom. There is nothing to fear here. How do you respond to that?
Nick, I wholeheartedly believe that we've got one of the greatest militaries in the world, but we've got one of the worst governments we've ever had. And it's not the work or the efforts of our armed service personnel. It's about those that are directing them. And this goes back to, you remember World War One when the wrong decisions were made?
Yes.
And things like that situation. I think wholeheartedly we're potentially in that one of those situations again. I mean, there's indecisiveness. There's been a lack of investment.
Yes.
Somebody was telling me over the weekend that if a missile was launched at the UK, we'll be reliant on the Americans to stop it. I don't know whether that's true or not.
I'm with you on John. I think we do have some of the best military men and women on the planet, but I don't think they've got the kit that they deserve. Lastly, the other government promise, we are going to keep a close watch on the cost of living. We are not going to let the oil companies gouge the prices. Again, your reaction to that?
Absolutely ridiculous. I mean, the only benefit I've seen with what's going on, I'm now getting more club card points than I've ever done when I'm buying me fuel.
Well, I suppose that's one positive way of looking at it, John. And as you're talking about fuel, you know it's time for...
Nick Ferrari's Fuel Tracker on LBC.
Well, the only upside of this is at least we hear Gasolina about twice a week. Yes, we go round the country now with our fuel trackers. And first up, as ever, let's go to Daniel in Golders Green. Now, just to remind you, when Daniel started, the price was 134.9, 142.9 for unleaded and diesel, respectively. Now, that had gone up on the 17th, whenever that was, Thursday, whenever the heck that was, to 145.9 and 162.9, respectively. Daniel in Golders Green joins me now. Morning, hope you had a decent weekend. What are we looking at, Daniel? Good morning.
Well, good morning to you, Nick. I can report that here in London today, petrol prices have gone up again. Unleaded is 148.9 and diesel is 166.9.
166. Hey, there's some events going on in Golders Green, aren't there, with these ambulances, Daniel?
There are indeed, Nick, and I just hope that people didn't use petrol from my local station to do it.
Daniel in Golders Green, thank you. We'll bring you a full report on events with those ambulances later in this hour, indeed before the 12:30 news. Thank you for that, Daniel. Look after yourself. So, unleaded up 3p and diesel up 4p from when we last spoke. And we're off to Scotland. Murdo's in Auchtermuchty now. Just to remind you, when we first spoke with Murdo, we were coming in at 132.9 unleaded, 145.9 diesel. When we last spoke, that was coming in at, I think, 143.9 and 168.9. Wow. Respectively, Murdo joins me now. What are we looking at today, Murdo? Morning.
Good morning, Nick. Good morning. Unleaded has risen to 149.
Sorry, it clicked. Start over. Sorry, mate. Not your fault. Give me the unleaded again.
149.9.
149.9. Got it.
And diesel is 176.9. Massive.
Look after yourself up in Scotland. So that, thanks, Murdo. Talk probably at the end of the week. So that has gone up 6p for a litre of unleaded and 8p. My God. My 8p for diesel. And we'll go around the rest of the country. We'll be in the southwest and the northeast in the next hour. I will do a table of those, actually. We should need to put it probably on the website. But I'll do that at the end of today's show because it gets a little bit in the way now. My thanks to both my fuel trackers, the first of whom, of course, was in Golders Green, and that's where this story takes us now. An arson attack on four ambulances belonging to a Jewish community ambulance service, now being treated as a hate crime, the Metropolitan Police has confirmed. Overseas reporter Fraser Knight is in Golders Green, joins me now. Fraser, what you got? Good morning.
Nick, good morning. Police say they are looking for three suspects after four ambulances belonging to the Hatzolah Jewish Community Service were set alight here overnight. Golders Green, of course, has such a huge Jewish community and there have been Jewish worshippers showing up here this morning. This is right next to a synagogue with a real sense of shock, surprise and concern. Police do say they're treating this as an anti-Semitic arson attack, which they know will cause a great deal of community concern, although thankfully no injuries have been reported. Alex Reisner lives nearby and told us that he has a real sense of concern around this.
To take out ambulances, who would do something like that and why? What level of hatred has gotten into society that they would target ambulances and life-saving equipment? Just to add, these ambulances are worth at least £250,000 each, very vital life-saving equipment in them. There's not something that could just be replaced. So this is going to set back the community's life-saving abilities.
There's still quite a big cordon in place, although it has been reduced in the past half hour, Nick. I can see a couple of the ambulances blacked and charred out, shelled out as well. Videos on social media which have shown three people wearing hoods, with hoods up, walking up to these ambulances, it seems, setting them alight and then running away. Some people have described explosions going off too, and in fact, windows at a nearby block of flats were also shattered. We understand around 50 people were evacuated. Ben lives nearby. He also owns a shop around the corner.
It's definitely scary. It makes me feel even less safe in London as a whole. But then again, there are certain crazy people out there and everyone's got to live their lives and we can't sort of keep on looking around the corner and we just power through and take it day by day.
Police say the explosions were likely caused by gas canisters on board the ambulances. But we've also heard this morning, Nick, from the Community Security Trust, the charity that monitors anti-Semitism in the UK, saying this has obvious comparison to similar anti-Semitic arson attacks recently in Belgium and the Netherlands. While police have said they will be engaging with faith leaders, carrying out additional patrols, and they've encouraged anyone with information to come forward and report it to them, saying they can do so anonymously if they wish to.
Fraser Knight, LBC's Fraser Knight reporting. Come to me more of your reactions concerning the many lines there are about the latest. Of course, this deadline as well that's ticking away. Now, there is concern, and you might have seen that the government minister was asked exactly where HMS Dragon is at the moment. Mark says the operational position of a warship on active service, and Dragon is on active service, is never reported for obvious reasons. Well, respectfully, Mark, I don't think you were listening. What was has it reached the necessary waters yet? Is it now in and around Cyprus? And they didn't know. No one's asking for the exact longitude and latitude, obviously, but it set sail. She set sail on the 10th. Now, a P&O cruiser going at a gentle pace would have been there in about 10 or 11 days. We're waking up on the 23rd. It's still not there. And bear in mind, in this time, France has dispatched 8 frigates to that particular stretch of water, and we're still struggling to get the one that we are sending down there. I think that's the reality, really, of it. Same subject, or rather on the aspect, the domestic aspect of lowering our bills. Mick in Newcastle. Who do the government think they're kidding by lowering our energy bills for 3 months? I've had my bill. It states categorically the green levy is being cut for this time period. Why don't we just cut it permanently? Are the local elections coming up in a couple of months? Mick, I think you've seen through that. You're absolutely right. All right, coming up after the news, the latest headliners regarding HS2, high-speed rail. They'll have to slow the trains down. Yes, you did hear that correctly. We'll give you more details on that. And here's a puzzling one. Pink Pony Club, I'm gonna keep on dancing at the Pink Pony Club. Chapel Roan is the star's name, and a Roan goal. She has now been banned from performing at a festival in Brazil after one of her security guards allegedly made Jude Law's daughter cry. Yes, you did hear that correctly. Full details on that. And, of course, unfortunate encounters with so-called stars to come. That's in the next hour. It's 7.30, breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari, on LBC Newstime, Dominic Ellis.
A suspected arson attack on ambulances in North London is being treated as an anti-Semitic hate crime. 4 vehicles belonging to a Jewish community group were set alight in the Golders Green area overnight. The Prime Minister is to chair an emergency COBRA meeting later to address the economic impact of the war in Iran. Cabinet ministers, as well as the Governor of the Bank of England, are due to meet this afternoon. And a man has become the first person to be charged under new laws banning football fans from entering a match without a ticket. The legislation for England and Wales came into effect yesterday ahead of the League Cup final at Wembley. LBC weather, cloudy for northern Scotland with outbreaks of rain. Some sunshine later for England and Wales, a high of 15 degrees.
Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
Even after all these years, even when we thought we couldn't be surprised yet still by the verbiage discharged by the President of the United States, the reference to Pearl Harbor in front of the Japanese Prime Minister is right up there, isn't it? She would never have said it, but there should have been a line back somewhere about mentioning the nukes, should there not, from the Japanese PM.
Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4 p.m. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, what you thought you were getting may not be what you ended up with. From unexpected site fee increases, running costs, a huge depreciation in value, many owners feel they've been missold. If you think this might be you, holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive the compensation you're entitled to. Text ASSIST to 78900 to find out more. That's ASSIST to 78900.
Wrong tool for the job? Don't make that mistake with your van. Get up to 30% off selected new Toyota vans and pickups with a warranty up to 10 years or 100,000 miles with every qualifying routine service. Visit your nearest Toyota centre or visit toyota.co.uk/van savings for more details. Savings on selected vans and pickups ordered by the 31st of March 2026. UK residents. See toyota.co.uk for full details. T's and C's apply.
So, what's on your to-do list today? Why don't you check if you're eligible for pension credit? It tops up your pension income and also opens up help with heating bills, council tax, and more. Search pension credit on gov.uk or call 0800 991234. There's nothing to lose. Check today. Pension credit. Credit where credit's due. Eligibility criteria apply.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
7:33, you're listening to LBC News breaking at this time, and an Air Canada flight collided with a ground vehicle while landing at LaGuardia Airport in New York City late last night, New York time, and sadly there are two fatalities. The pilot and the co-pilot have died. Now, the flight was coming in from Montreal. It landed shortly before midnight when it struck a Port Authority rescue vehicle on the runway, responding to a separate incident. NBC New York is reporting that the pilot and the co-pilot are the ones who are the fatalities, but many others have been injured. The flight was affiliated with Jazz Aviation, a regional airline in Nova Scotia, and was operating on behalf of Air Canada. It would appear that fatalities, tragic as it is, are limited to that at this time, but there are multiple injuries. You might have seen some video of this. Candidly, it was never going to end well if you see that video, and that's the latest we have on it. If we get any more, obviously we will update you. Into the world of business. Now, at the top of the next hour, we're going to be talking about this COBRA meeting that the Prime Minister will be holding, along with senior colleagues as well. This is as possibly the energy bill's increase is, well, almost nailed on. Here with details, Christian May, Editor-in-Chief at City AM. A lot of nervousness around the pumps and around fuel bills. What do you think is coming our way? Christian, good morning to you.
Good morning, Nick. Yeah, we can look at the state of play in the energy market shortly. Just worth considering that I expect another gloomy start to financial markets more broadly as this week gets underway. Just looking at the notes from one city analyst who's reflecting on Donald Trump's incendiary ultimatum to the Iranian regime that if they don't open fully the Straits of Hormuz, I think now within 24 hours, he will destroy their energy infrastructure, to which the Iranians have said, well, two can play at that game. This sort of brinkmanship is causing serious concern and volatility across all sorts of markets. One city analyst this morning now saying that the war is entering a dangerous new phase, and markets are starting to wake up to the gravity of the potential for long-term impact on energy markets in particular. He's talking about a dangerous new phase for financial markets. We expect a sea of red when it opens here in London. Of course, closer to home, we're talking about the energy impact. And as you mentioned, the Prime Minister chairing that COBRA meeting this afternoon alongside the Governor of the Bank of England. Plenty to chew over, not least the fact that the head of Centrica, the owner of British Gas, has said, look, if things continue the way they're going, it is inevitable that energy prices are going to rise. We're talking about a £300 or so rise for the average household under the infrastructure of that energy price cap when that is next reviewed. He did say that he thinks that it's going to be oil and therefore petrol fuel in particular that's going to be more immediately and obviously hit than gas prices, domestic gas prices. That said, those prices are very elevated already. And thinking about some of the damage that's been inflicted in the region, I was reading the words of a Qatari official reflecting on the latest attack on their gas infrastructure. He said, I think about £20 billion worth of damage has been caused to a facility that they cost them $26 billion to build just a few years ago. And another analyst pointing out that the crunch for gas is coming in a couple of weeks' time, and that is the point at which all the gas that is currently in transit or in ships or in port will be unloaded, if you like, leaving us then staring down the barrel of where to get the rest of it from. It is going to be a sticky few weeks, and that's the sort of thing that the COBRA meeting this afternoon will be chewing over without a doubt.
It's enough to make you want to go down the pub, but you better be quick at the rate at which they're closing.
Yes, there's new figures out today that shine a light on the rate at which pubs are closing. This is a very long-standing issue. We've talked a lot about how some of the problems facing the pub and hospitality sector have been compounded by recent government policy. But it is a long-standing issue. The number of pubs has been in decline for decades, frankly. There's a question of the extent to which government choices are accelerating that, certainly not arresting that decline. Some 789 pubs and bars closed last year in England, Scotland and Wales, as according to figures out this morning. That's more than double the rate in 2020, when there were 367 exposures. And now we have talked a lot about some of the very well understood issues around business rates, etc. They are, of course, also suffering from new employment legislation and indeed increased labour costs. And they are now bracing for a serious hike in their own energy bills. And you can imagine, of course, the amount of consumption that these venues will run through. Ed Miliband, for his part, has said that, you know, he's launched some sort of advice pack for pubs as to how they can lower their energy bills, including, don't forget, he said that they could turn their fridges off overnight, which did not go down well with some publicans. Indeed, we spoke at City AM to Tim Martin of Wetherspoons last week, who said that Miliband has got three areas of non-expertise: running pubs, eating bacon sandwiches, and energy policy. Well, that is the view of Tim Martin of Wetherspoon, who was less than impressed with Ed Miliband's advice on how he can save money in his pubs. But they are facing another wave of cost increases in the form of their energy bills that is insult to injury these days.
Now, an area we look at considerably is youth employment, or should that be youth unemployment, and the difficulty those folk have getting jobs. And a couple of high street bosses are raising concerns over that as well, Christian.
They are, and particularly interesting ones. Unemployment held steady in the most recent set of figures. I think it's about 5.2% nationally, but is the unemployment among the 18 to 24-year-olds that has climbed and has hit 14.5%. And that has prompted the British Retail Consortium to warn of a jobless generation. You have to consider how many people's first jobs is in retail, on the high street, and by the way, this goes for hospitality as well. They're all feeling the pinch on increased labour costs. But some of the voices over the weekend that have specifically pointed out some of the dangers in the Employment Rights Act, which we've talked about a lot, could threaten the very jobs it's designed to protect. That's according to the boss of electricals retailer Currys. But it's also worth noting that the head of the company Richer Sounds, which is really interesting intervention, because they've also said that this is a deeply concerning set of policies that could hamper their employment of young people. And that's interesting because Richer Sounds is known for being quite a progressive and forward-thinking employer. And they do a bit like John Lewis. They do all sorts of great benefits for people who have long careers working at Richer Sounds, and they share in the profits, and it's a very good employer. And so even they are pointing out that the government might not have got it quite right when it comes to their employment policies. Is the government listening? Well, maybe that should be on the agenda at the Cobra meeting this afternoon as well.
Thanks for that, Christian May, Editor-in-Chief, City AM. Talk around the same time tomorrow, 7.40 is the time. A couple of emails and we're going to give you more details on that HS2 story. Tim says, while petrol price rise, the cost of charging my EV goes down, but you'll never admit EVs are the future, will you, Nick? Well, certainly you are in the box seat at the moment, undoubtedly. Good luck to you, Tim. Craig says we should be investing in a military and uninvested in the bone idol of this country. We want to sit at home and do nothing. I'm waiting for a Prime Minister with a government to start looking after this country. The only way we'll get a government and a PM is if we take away the voting rights of those who do nothing and give voting only to the hard-working people of this country. Goodness me. That's right out there, isn't it? What happens if you do have a job and then you lose your job? You're made unemployed through no fault of your own, Craig. That would be the only issue there. All right, let's come to other matters. And a story I've mentioned a couple of times, because when you saw the headline in the newspapers yesterday, not so fast, HS2 to save billions by slowing trains, in the Sunday Times business pages, you wonder what the whole point of this project is. And it is announced HS2 could formally explore reducing the speed of its trains. This in turn will save billions of pounds and reduce delays. Out it has emerged that locomotives and their carriages would otherwise need to be shipped to China for testing. Yes, you did hear that correctly. On their current spec, HS2 trains will run at 224 miles an hour, making them among the fastest in the world. But the government have ascertained these trains would need to be sent to China or have to wait until the line is constructed before being put through trials. Annette Jane Hunter is a specialist rail consultant at the Railway Consultancy and chairs the Chartered Institute of Transport and Logistics. Well, as a journalist, the headline makes you want to laugh out loud, but you're an expert in the field. What do you see as the reality? Anna Jane, good morning.
Good morning. Well, I hope this is an attempt to make sure that the project gets finished and that we get some benefit out of it, and hopefully within a cost envelope that hasn't completely run away with it, given, you know, the overspends that we've already had. So I think this is about what do we need, and making sure that we get what we need rather than anything that's additional or a nice to have at this stage in what's an overrunning project.
In what way will it help deliver? Anna Jane, explain to the layman if you would.
Well, I think we've long since made observations from the sidelines on this project that it might be a bit over-engineered. It could be a bit gold-plated. We've seen this with other projects in UK Rail, and it's not the first, but this one's perhaps a particular extreme example of it. So if you reduce the speeds required, that helps reduce the cost and therefore the time taken. So this is about getting back time and budget to deliver what's an overrunning project that we need for the UK.
Now, look, I know you didn't come up with the idea and you didn't sign off on the idea, but it's meant to be a high-speed link that was going to link London to, I don't know, Manchester and Sheffield and all points north. Now I think it's not going to go beyond Birmingham and it's not going to be such a high-speed link. Anna-Jane, you can't seriously continue to say this has any merit, can you?
No, and I've said many times before, Nick, that, you know, I would have started at the north, I would
yes,
have focused on that bit,
I
would have done
that,
it very differently.
Yes.
So I agree, it's not what it said on the tin, it's the opposite of a Ron Seal project, and I get that. But I also have said many times that I wouldn't have focused on the high-speed element of this project. It's had a bit of an identity crisis for my money where, you know, it was never really about that for us. It was always about releasing capacity. It was
Explain
about
Explain that to my listeners, because I have heard and I understand that argument that it was actually missold, not by you, but was missold to the public. HS2 is perhaps a clue as to what they thought it was going to do. Give us the capacity argument again in layman's terms, Anna-Jane.
So the West Coast Main Line, which is the route that is going to run alongside HS2 into London Euston, is the busiest bit of railway really that we have, and it's right up there to capacity with both the long distance trains that call less and those local stopping trains that take people from places like Milton Keynes, Watford into London. So and it also has a lot of freight on it, crucially. So it's a very, very busy, the busiest in Europe, the West Coast Main Line, in terms of freight, or it has been. So when you've got that mixed traffic railway, it gets really busy. It's difficult to run everything punctually. And we're working on aging infrastructure. Many of the assets were built decades ago. So those were all objectives that were really worthy in terms of building an alternative line to take some of that strain off the West Coast Main Line. Somewhere along the line, the engineers got a bit giddy. The marketeers got excited about calling it a high-speed railway and making it, you know, the fastest in the world and the best in the world. You know, all of this with the best of intentions, but it hasn't gone well, and I think everyone agrees with that. And now this seems to be the latest attempt to try and claw some of that back and get us something out of this. Let's please finish it. Let's please get this railway line done, and then we can get some benefits released from it.
Enjoy talking with you. Have a good day. Thank you. Anna-Jane Hunter is a specialist rail consultant at the Railway Consultancy and chaired of the Chartered Institute of Transport and Logistics, and was a director at Network Rail some years ago. All right, coming up after the news, lucky number 7. That's the number of new towns set to be built in the countryside, but where exactly might they go? Well, you'll be hearing from the government minister, and then many of the government will be gathering in the later this afternoon, and we'll be looking at it in the next hour. Will they honour this pledge?
This government will not tolerate price gouging, and I will be meeting with petrol retailers this week to raise concerns to get prices down at the pumps for all of our constituents.
Do you think the Chancellor's actually been out in a car and driven past a petrol station lately? No, me neither. That's in the next hour. 7:46, LBC News headlines. Dominic Ellis.
A suspected arson attack on ambulances in North London is being treated as an anti-Semitic hate crime. Sir Keir Starmer is to chair an emergency COBRA meeting later to look at the economic impact of the war in Iran. And changes to short-term prison sentences are coming into force in England and Wales. LBC weather, cloudy in northern Scotland with outbreaks of rain. Most of England and Wales will see some sunny spells, a high of 15 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. In Golders Green, the Golders Green Road is closed westbound between Albert Gardens and Prince's Park Avenue. It's because of the ongoing investigation, and it's very busy in the area, although eastbound has now reopened. The A40 is closed both ways between the Northern Roundabouts and the Marylebone Flyover for the works, and there are long delays both ways. And also queues on the M25 clockwise, so just after Junction 10 at the A3. It's because a car has broken down. It's just this moment being recovered, but there are delays from before Junction 9 at Leatherhead. Also busy on the M23 northbound to the M25 junction, where a car's broken down. One lane is closed and severe delays continue on the Mildmay line.
The LBC app. News your way. This is LBC.
Gathering round the table with family gives you a warm feeling inside. But if that warm feeling is heartburn or indigestion, it could make family meals less fun. Don't let it spoil your day. Think Gaviscon Double Action. It gets to work in seconds and lasts for up to 4 hours of relief. so you can get back to enjoying quality time with the family. For heartburn and indigestion, think Gaviscon. Gaviscon Double Action Chewable Tablets and Oral Suspension for heartburn and indigestion. Always read the label.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973 LBC.
So, what's on your to-do list today? Why don't you check if you're eligible for pension credit? It tops up your pension income and also opens up help with heating bills, council tax, and more. Search pension credit on gov.uk or call 0800 991234. There's nothing to lose. Check today. Pension credit. Credit where credit's due. Eligibility criteria apply.
Jay here knows that Zoopla can provide valuations for any home in the UK, so we can see what that new couple across the road might have paid.
Ooh la la.
Have a nose at what the curtain twitchers next door could sell for. And even see what his own place is worth.
Cool, look at that.
Plus, Zoopla lets you find and compare local estate agents if you do decide to sell up. Think of all those new neighbours you'll be able to snoop on, Jay. If you want to know, just ask Zoopla.
Tesco Insurance are driving down the cost of motoring with 10% off car insurance. Take out a car insurance policy before the 15th of May 2026 and you'll get 10% off with club card prices. We offer a range of cover options so you can choose the one that's right for you. Save 10% when you buy or renew a car policy with Tesco Insurance. Search Tesco Car Insurance and get a quote direct today. Club card required. Excludes add-ons. T's and C's apply.
Hi, I'm looking for a pair of jeans.
Right. Low slung, slouchy, wide leg, bower leg, curved leg, flared, straight or skinny.
Blue?
Fashion. It's hard to keep on top of. Other things, like the upcoming changes to renting, are a bit easier. If you are a landlord and you have existing tenants, you must send them a copy of the government's information sheet by the 31st of May, or risk a fine. Find out more at gov.uk/renting-is-changing.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
10 minutes before eight, let's change the conversation and talk about lucky number seven. That's the number of new towns that are going to be built. And here with full details of where they're going to be located and hopefully how many homes they might provide and an idea of a town line, a timeline is the relevant, or even a town line, timeline is the relevant Minister, Housing and Planning Minister, Matthew Pennycook, who joins me now. Good to have you on, Minister. Can you give us an idea of a location, the number of homes and a rough idea of timescale? Morning to you.
Morning. We're taking the first formal step in honouring that manifesto commitment to bring forward the next generation of new towns. We're going out to consult on the programme and the seven proposed locations we intend to take forward. On timelines, Nick, we've been really clear we want spades in the ground on at least three of these sites in this Parliament. We're going to run as fast as we possibly can at all the final propositions that come forward after this very brief consultation when we confirm sites in the summer.
What is it that commends the sites? It's Tempsford in Bedfordshire, Leeds South Bank, Crews Hill and Chase Park in North London, Victoria North in Manchester, Thamesmead, South East London, Brabazon, South Gloucestershire and Milton Keynes in Buckinghamshire. What is it that these sites had that allowed you and your colleagues to greenlight them?
So we asked, if you remember, Nick, for the independent New Towns Task Force, which we established, to go out there, look at all the sites across the country, do a call for evidence and come back to us with recommendations. They came back with 12 proposed sites and we have assessed and filtered those sites and brought forward these seven propositions. They are the ones that most closely adhere to our objectives. And they broadly are, how can we address at scale the housing crisis in this country and deliver lots more homes? And how can we boost economic growth and productivity by, in particular, unconstraining those towns and cities across the country which are suffering from a lack of growth. Milton Keynes is a good example of that, Leeds South Bank another, where a significant urban extension can really boost economic growth and productivity.
The two-year anniversary of you and your colleagues coming to power is certainly in sight. You had a very ambitious promise, 1.5 million homes. I know I won't need to remind you of that number.
Yep.
How are we looking, Minister?
We are... As expected, low numbers of housing completions in the early years of Parliament. We've had this discussion before, Nick. You know it's a stretching target. These things don't turn around overnight. And the 1.5 always involved a very steep increase in house building rates in the final years of the Parliament. I can give you numbers in if you like. I know you like.
Yes, I love
statistics.
A number. You know that,
so,
Matthew.
As of the 15th of March, yes. we have seen 342,100 new homes completed in this Parliament. That's obviously a low number. What I want to bring home to your viewers is, given the nature of the development cycle, the overwhelming majority of those completions are planning permissions submitted in the last Parliament, when we had a Conservative government that had made a series of anti-supply changes, not least abolishing housing targets. So it was always going to take time to turn things around. And obviously the conflict in the Gulf adds stronger headwinds to the challenge. But we think we can get there, and we will see a significant and sustained increase in house building in the later years of the Parliament.
You're sticking to that pledge. You don't want to revise or review it then, Ms. Pennicutt?
We're not going to revise it because we need an ambitious target, Nick, to galvanise industry, but also because the scale of the housing crisis is such that I think it would be irresponsible of us to bring forward a less ambitious target. We could have said 1 million, 1.1 million and easily hit it. We do need to step things up and really accelerate and boost house building, because we've got 1.3 million people languishing on social housing waiting lists. We've got 170,000 children homeless in temporary accommodation. So anything less, I think, wouldn't have matched the scale of the challenge.
Just to round off our conversation about these new towns, and good luck with your ambitions. I'm not familiar with most of the areas, but I am familiar with Thamesmead, because I think,
one
of my sons lives in your patch, actually, yep. As I think you're aware. Are you providing for hospitals as well? There's a network of support that you need to suddenly put in a new town, and you'll know that in your patch, hospital provision is one of the major concerns. Minister.
We do need to look at infrastructure provision in the round. We've got to look at all of the constraints that these particular sites might face in terms of challenges. That's partly what this consultation and the strategic environmental assessment we're doing is to get to the root of. But I think, just to bring home to your viewers what we're talking about and why new towns as an intervention by government are so important, they can transform the way we deliver homes. So when you comprehensively assemble land, master plan, and bring forward homes in a different way, you can get that upfront land value capture that funds infrastructure and amenities and everything we need to make these thriving communities in the years ahead.
We have other matters to discuss, and I'm sure you're prepared for those. One newspaper, the Daily Mail, asks why it took so long for the public to be informed that there had been airstrikes on the Diego Garcia base. Indeed, we learnt from CNN and the Wall Street Journal prior to the government. Why was that, Minister?
Well, I think as a general point of principle, Nick, we don't routinely comment on threats due to intelligence sharing. We don't routinely give live commentary on incidents that have taken place. We've now confirmed, as appropriate, that missiles were heading towards Diego Garcia. I want to be very clear that he didn't hit the base. But I've been challenged on this numerous times this morning. I just think it's grossly irresponsible for a government minister to sit and to detail the government's assessment of Iran's targeting or any other country's targeting. All the British people need to know is that we have the means, we have the resource necessary to defend this country from attacks on our soil or from abroad.
But all the government needs to do is watch CNN. Why should CNN tell the British public ahead of its government?
Well, as I say, in that particular example, we've confirmed the details, very top line, of what happened. But as I say, we don't give a routine running commentary on the threats we face or a particular instance in a fast-moving environment. I'm sure your viewers would appreciate why.
So one made it for 1,990 miles. How close to Diego Garcia did the other rocket get, ballistic missile get?
Again, Nick, I'm not going to confirm the precise locations of where the missiles reached. I don't think that's in the national interest for us to give that sort of running commentary. I understand why people are concerned. I understand why statements that have been made will cause a degree of anxiety. But the British people need to be assured that, as I say, we have the means necessary to defend this country. And as a government, after years in which previous administrations have run down our armed forces, we're finally investing in air and missile defence following the recommendations of the Strategic Defence Review.
With the severity of this event over the weekend, not doubting the skills of your colleague, Steve Reid, surely we needed to hear from the Defence Secretary, didn't we? Or the Foreign Secretary?
I don't, Nick, as I'm sure you'll appreciate, decide who goes on the broadcast round. We had a really important and impactful announcement related to Pride in Place yesterday that Steve did get a brief opportunity to discuss. But he's a member of the Cabinet and he's involved in these discussions. And as you'll know, later today, the Prime Minister is convening and chairing a meeting of COBRA. That will have Cabinet ministers present. So We're a team as a government, and it's a whole of government effort.
Well, let's talk a little bit about that COBRA meeting. You'll be aware the tax take on a litre of petrol, unleaded or diesel, is quite incredible. 38% tax on unleaded, 33% for diesel plus VAT. Why doesn't the government ease some of that?
Well, the government will no doubt be looking at in the Treasury at a series of options, but I think our record on fuel prices speaks for itself. The 5p cut has been maintained. That's in place until September. We've ensured that fuel prices don't rise in line with inflation. Oh, we've got the new fuel tracker.
Minister, please, well, of course, I don't know whether you probably run an electric vehicle, but if you run a car that's powered by diesel or unleaded and you've been to the pumps lately, you'll see the price is soaring. You must have seen that, unless you run an electric car.
The prices are soaring in places, and I thought you made a very good point on the broadcast round yesterday that we're seeing a huge differentiation in prices across the country, which is why the CMA have put fuel retailers on notice. And I just want to reiterate what previous ministers have said on other rounds, that this government will not accept profiteering off the back
of... But they're doing it, Minister, surely. I mean, to go from 139.9, I'll quote you unleaded, 139.9 prior to the problem to this morning, 148.9, and diesel, the same place in London, 1559 employs 1.669. They're already profiteering, aren't they, Minister?
Well, there's, I think, an important difference between the impact of the crisis and how it feeds through and what is profiteering. But that's what the CMA has put fuel retailers on notice about. And I've no doubt, Nick, to go back to the original point, this will be one of the issues that is discussed at the COBRA meeting this afternoon, and we'll get a statement off the back of that.
Last minute or so together. Can you tell us, when will HMS Dragon actually reach the necessary area and be ready for deployment off Cyprus?
I'm not going to give you a date. I'm not going to give you a precise location.
I didn't ask for location. I asked for when it'll be there, when it will actually be deployed, fully deployed.
Again, I don't think providing you a particular date is useful in that context.
Well, it might help my listeners. They just wonder whether we're ready to take... I mean, a P&O cruiser would have been there. She set sail on March the 10th. What is taking so much time?
And it's in the Mediterranean is all I can say, I'm afraid, Nick.
But why so long? I don't want to know where she is, because I don't want to put the lives of first in anyway. But why so long? The P&O would have been there 5 days ago.
Well, I'm not going to go into, Nick, for very obvious reasons,
I think. But we go slower than the P&O. The Royal Navy is slower than the P&O, Mr. Pennycook.
I'm not going to get into operational matters of that kind. I don't think that's useful, but it's in the Mediterranean, it's on its way, and in the round, we have the resources we need, as I said, to defend this country our interests abroad.
Sorry, lastly, a story that's developed. Four ambulances set on fire in London in what is believed to be the Metropolitan Police are treating as an anti-Semitic hate crime. Had to get a word from you on that, obviously, on the safety of the people, the safety of that community in North London. Minister.
Just a really shocking incident. This is Hatzolah as a community ambulance service run by volunteers. There'll be understandable concern out there. The Met are investigating the incident as an anti-Semitic crime. I don't want to get ahead of that live investigation. If it is confirmed that it is, let me just be really as clear as I possibly can, Nick. That would be an affront to the Jewish community in this country, but not just that, an attack on all of us and our way of life and our society. There is no place for anti-Jewish hatred in this country, and as a government, we'll do everything we possibly can to stamp it out.
Seven new towns on the way as part of honouring the pledge of 1.5 million homes over the course of this Parliament, as outlined. Thank you for your time by Housing and Planning Minister Matthew Pennycook, who takes us to 1 minute after eight. So let's get some LBC News headlines.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, a suspected arson attack on four ambulances in North London is being treated as an anti-Semitic hate crime. The vehicles belonging to a Jewish community group were set alight in the Golders Green area overnight. The Prime Minister has called the attack deeply shocking and says anti-Semitism has no place in our society. Max Reisner lives in the local area.
To take out ambulances, who would do something like that and why? What level of hatred has gotten into society that they would target ambulances and life-saving equipment? Just to add, these ambulances are worth at least £250,000 each. Very vital life-saving equipment in them. It's not something that could just be replaced. So this is going to set back the community's life-saving abilities.
Iran has warned that it'll completely close the Strait of Hormuz if President Trump attacks the country's power stations. Donald Trump has threatened to obliterate the sites unless Tehran reopens the global shipping route tonight. Over the weekend, it was confirmed there was a failed missile strike on the joint UK-US airbase on Diego Garcia. Government Minister Matthew Pennycook has just been asked by Nick why US media outlets broke the news before the government.
I've been challenged on this numerous times this morning. I just think it's grossly irresponsible for a government minister to sit and to detail the government's assessment of Iran's targeting or any other country's targeting. All the British people need to know is that we have the means, we have the resource necessary to defend this country from attacks on our soil or from abroad.
Separately, the Prime Minister is to chair an emergency COBRA meeting later to address the economic impact of the war in Iran. Cabinet ministers, as well as the Governor of the Bank of England, are due to meet this afternoon. A passenger plane has collided with a fire engine on the runway at LaGuardia Airport in New York. It's understood it happened shortly after the Air Canada flight landed last night. US media reports suggest two people have died. Major changes to short-term prison sentences have come into force this morning in England and Wales. The reforms mean most offenders that would have spent up to a year in prison will instead receive a suspended sentence. The changes are part of efforts to ease prison overcrowding. And seven locations have now been chosen for new towns in England. At least 10,000 homes will be built in places like Leeds, South Gloucestershire and Manchester. Ministers have promised construction work will start before the next general election. In the city, the FTSE 100 just reopened at 99.18. It closed down 146 on Friday. The pound buys $1.34 and €1.16. LBC weather. Sunny spells for large parts of England and Wales. Some outbreaks of rain for the north of Scotland. A high of 15 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Sorry to interrupt your day, but I've just been diagnosed with dementia and I'm going to need your help. I'll need help when I can no longer button a shirt or recognise my own family. My daughter will need help too. I worry this could ruin her life. And we will all need help to find a cure to end the devastation of dementia. I can't do this alone.
It will take a society to beat dementia. Alzheimer's Society.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
25 minutes after 8 on Monday, March the 23rd. Coming up in this hour, the Iran conflict, but we bring it right back home. We talk about that COBRA meeting taking place later today. The idea of some kind of profit cap on oil companies, on energy companies, who in some instances, of course, take the money away in wheelbarrows as the impact is felt at home. And staying with matters at home...
With concerns about Iran's missile capability and President Trump warning he'll obliterate their infrastructure, what are Iranians in the UK making of developments? I'm LBC's Henry Riley in Finchley.
Plus, can you be a true Christian and not go to church? That is Zadok the Priest, composed by Handel for King George. Well, one of his followers, Prince William, of course, next in line to the throne, says he is a Christian, but he admits he doesn't go to church as much as he should. Can you be a Christian and not attend church? In other news, the latest book concerning Meghan and Harry, you'll hear from the biographer Tom Bauer. That's later in this hour. And... Chapel Roan, the singer of Pink Pony Club there, but a Roan goal for her as her security team are accused of rather bullying an 11-year-old girl. We'll give you more details later in this hour.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
What value COBRA? I know it sounds very dramatic, and I think the government probably quite like, and maybe some of the other people involved as well, we will convene a COBRA meeting today. What does COBRA actually achieve? We're going to have one this afternoon. They're going to have one this afternoon specifically aimed at the impact that the Iranian conflict is having back here at home. Now, one of the aspects which I just explored with Matthew Pennycook, who's the government minister on the media round, is that when you buy your litre of unleaded or your litre of diesel, over 50%, goes straight to the government. There's various levies and fuels and duties that are... levies and duties that come to 38% for petrol, 33% for diesel, according to the RAC, and then the VAT to be applied as well. So you're nudging around. So if they really wanted to help, I'm not saying you cancel it all, because I realise this help funds the health service and buys missiles and keeps schools. I understand all of that. But how far would you go? Now, this is concerning. If you've been listening to our fuel trackers, I'm just going to cite one example. My friend Murdo in Scotland, he was told us that prior to this, you could get a litre of unleaded for 132.9 and diesel 145.9 when we spoke to him this morning. He's one of our fuel trackers. At 149.9 for unleaded, so that's an increase of 17 pence. 176.9 for diesel, that's a handy 31 pence rise in about the last... When did we start this? About a week and a half ago. Dear God. Dear God. That's about 10 days. So what has this promise from the Chancellor?
Stability is the most important thing we can do to get interest rates and inflation down, and tackling the cost of living, especially given the global headwinds, is my top priority. This government will not tolerate price gouging, and I will be meeting with petrol retailers this week to raise concerns to get prices down at the pumps for all of our constituents.
Chancellor, you obviously haven't been for a drive for a while. 132.9 plays 149.9 for unleaded. 145.9 plays 176.9 for diesel. You've been in your car lately. Some of the points I put to the Housing and Planning Minister, Matthew Pennycook, about what is to be done to address the cost of living for you.
The government will no doubt be looking in the Treasury at a series of options, but I think our record on fuel prices speaks for itself. The 5p cut has been maintained. That's in place until September. We've ensured that fuel prices don't rise in line with inflation. Oh, we've got the new fuel tracker.
Minister, please, well, of course, I don't know whether you probably run an electric vehicle, but if you run a car that's powered by diesel or unleaded and you've been to the pumps lately, you'll see the prices soaring. You must have seen that, unless you run an electric car.
The prices are soaring in places, and I thought you made a very good point on the broadcast round yesterday that we're seeing a huge differentiation in prices across the country, which is why the CMA have put fuel retailers on notice. And I just want to reiterate what previous ministers have said on other rounds, that this government will not accept profiteering off the back of...
But they're doing it, Minister, surely. I mean, to go from 139.9, I'll quote you unleaded, 139.9 prior to the problem to this morning, 148.9, and diesel, the same place in London, 1559 employs 1.669. They're already profiteering, aren't they, Minister?
Well, there's, I think, an important difference between the impact of the crisis and how it feeds through and what is profiteering. But that's what the CMA has put fuel retailers on notice about. And I've no doubt, Nick, to go back to the original point, this will be one of the issues that is discussed at the COBRA meeting this afternoon, and we'll get a statement off the back of that.
Housing and Planning Minister Matthew Pennycook. Now, Sean Simon was a former minister, Labour minister under Gordon Brown, now a specialist partner at Flint Global, and joins me now. Sean, what value COBRA? Good morning.
Hi, Nick. So there is value to COBRA. Like, I was in a few COBRA meetings many years ago.
I'm sure you were.
And it's a very efficient way to get kind of all the people whose attention you want concentrated on something to be effectively in the same room at the same time, really concentrating. And so that's kind of halfway there, but it doesn't obviously guarantee you a solution. I think most people know that this crisis is not the government's fault, and there was nothing in their power could have altered it. But at the end of the day, I think the expectations have changed, kind of post-COVID, post these huge shocks that we've seen in Ukraine. People expect the government now to come in and do something to soften the pain of these kind of things, even when it's not their fault. And I think the danger for the government is that they recognise the problem and that they want to be seen to act, but that they don't do enough. I think that's the risk. People need to feel, and not just the poorest and most vulnerable, but everybody, normal people, need to feel the difference in their pocket before it gets out of control again.
But what can they do, Sean? What are the levers they can pull?
So, I mean, it's never their favourite lever, but you've talked about the, you know, fuel duties. That would be a very simple and easy lever. But half the price of fuel is duty, after all. But as you also alluded, that's, you know, money straight into the Treasury coffers that all of a sudden is not available to spend on other things. It's the headroom, the kind of fiscal headroom that they'd managed to create gets eroded. There's no free money anywhere, is there? I mean, the other obvious lever they can pull is the price cap. Like, everybody's expecting the price cap to go up massively in a couple of months' time. It doesn't have to. You know, the government has the power to say, actually, no, let's hold the price cap where it is, or something like that. We'll find a new formula. And they can find a formula that means that energy companies make less profit, which is not the same as capping their profits. That I think is the wrong signal.
Lastly, domestically, so not trying to handle President Trump, which would be an unenviable task at the best of times. Domestically, how do you think Sir Keir Starmer and his team have handled this for the British population?
So I think the British population so far is giving them the benefit of the doubt. As I say, I think people know there's nothing that they could have done to stop this happening. The worst effects of this, notwithstanding what you've been saying about fuel, the worst effects haven't really been felt. I think what needs to happen now is that before the really serious effects start to make themselves felt by people's in people's household bills, the government takes strong enough action to actually mitigate that in a way that people can turn around and say, yeah, fair play to the government. We had a bad thing coming down the road and they've significantly softened it.
Enjoy speaking with you as ever. Sean Simon, thank you. You're a Labour minister under Gordon Brown. You're now a specialist partner at Flint Global. Listening to that 13 minutes after 8 is Will Hutton. Now, Will is a political economist and columnist with The Observer. Joins me now. Will, writing in one of the newspapers yesterday, the Sunday Times, Richard Walker, the executive chairman of Iceland, or Lord Walker as he is, talked about the idea of a profit cap. Where are you on such a suggestion? Good morning.
Good morning. I'm in sympathy with it. I think there are two more things that you could do, actually, on energy prices. One, I think that the structure of the energy market is all over the place. Electricity prices are levied not on the average price of cost of producing electricity, but the cost of the least efficient power station. And when the price cap is kind of announced in May, early June, they should change that formula so they could very much kind of lower the increase in fuel bills for everybody. And that is one thing they could do. A second thing they could do, and I think you're right on this, is they could kind of abstain from the 5p increase in the excise duty that they're planning. The problem with both those measures, by the way, is the financial markets, which will look very askance. I don't know whether you noticed, but borrowing costs have risen to an 18-year high. Mm. So on what you've also got to do simultaneously with taking these measures, and I think a profit cap is on petrol retailers is a very... It needs to be said. I mean, consumers need to know that actually firm action is being taken. There's no profiteering going on. But simultaneously, we can't have kind of calamity in the financial markets like there was on Thursday and Friday of last week with this big, massive sell-off of British government bonds, taking yields to the highest level since the financial crisis. And there, I think, the government has to be much more determined about containing kind of the growth in welfare costs. I would announce the end of the triple lock and go to an average lock for the increase in pensions. And I would also, I think there's a whole crisis going on in the mortgage market, by the way. There's a million people who've got fixed rate mortgages maturing. And I think the government should do what the Americans do, which is to the Bank of England should construct an agency which buys these mortgages off mortgage providers and backstops the whole mortgage market. So there's three things you've got to do. Backstop the mortgage market. You've got to kind of signal to the markets that you could, the welfare spending you're curbing the growth, and you've got to change the way that energy pricing is organised in this country. And those are the three things that should be on the corporate table this morning.
Lastly, Will, this is entering its fourth week. Some experts say, I don't quite think how it'll happen, but if it ends relatively quickly, the impact, while it will be felt, we will get over. Where do you see the pressure point? If we're talking about this in another 4 weeks, or God forbid, another 8 weeks, when would it really start to hit home?
This is the biggest international energy crisis since whenever. The International Energy Agency said that to lose one-fifth of the world oil supplies going through the Straits of Hormuz is unbelievable. There will be, if it's still going in 4 to 6 weeks' time, there will be a world recession. I could even imagine, and you're talking about the price of petrol at the pump, there'll be rationing of petrol. It wouldn't be, that is a perfect possibility if this goes on for 6 to 8 weeks. The only possible solution to this is the Republican Party in the States really kind of forcing Trump's hand and just saying, you're not going to get the $200 billion you've asked for to continue this war. The American people won't put up with it. And so it's American domestic politics that's going to kind of settle this. I think the Iranians are digging in for a long war. It's really, really, really worrying.
Always enjoy speaking with you, Will. Thank you. Will Hutton is a political economist and columnist with The Observer. The government says they're doing all they possibly can to help you. Do you buy that? And remember, as you pump that unleaded or that diesel, more than 50% of it is going straight to the government. Of course, they can't stop it all, because we need to have power in our hospitals, but surely some will explore that idea. 8:17, LBC News headlines. Dominic Ellis.
A suspected arson attack on four ambulances in North London is being treated as an anti-Semitic hate crime. The Prime Minister is to chair an emergency COBRA meeting later to address the economic impact of the war in Iran. And major changes to short-term prison sentences are coming into force in England and Wales. LBC weather, sunny spells for large parts of England and Wales. Some outbreaks of rain for northern Scotland. A high of 15 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. The A40 is closed both ways between the Northern Roundabout and the Marylebone Flyover. It's because of the works and there are severe delays both ways. Lots of traffic's using the A4 instead. So that's very busy eastbound from the Chiswick Roundabout to Earls Court. Only one lane's open on the M4 eastbound just after the Heston services because a car was on fire and there are lengthy queues on the approach. Also delays on the M25 clockwise from Junction 9 at Leatherhead to Junction 10 at the A3. A car broke down earlier. It has been recovered now, but it's still very slow. In Hainault, the Hainault Road has had to be closed both ways. That's because of a fire and there are delays in the area.
This is LBC.
Search Kayak for great deals on Wait, that doesn't say flights. Search Kayak for great deals on car hire? With Kayak, you can compare hundreds of car rental sites to find great deals. Even better, you see costs up front. And if it's flexibility you're after, Kayak's got a handy free cancellation filter. Lovely stuff. So next time you're searching for car hire, at home or for your holes, search Kayak and go see for yourself.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973 LBC.
Hi, I'm Claire, and last year I did my first big hike for Cancer Research UK. It was amazing. The scenery was stunning, the volunteers cheered us through it, and the free hot meal at the end was really what I needed. I did the full marathon hike. There's also a half marathon and a 10K if you don't fancy the big one.
Join thousands of hikers like Claire and escape to nature as you help to fund life-saving research. Search Big Hike today for 30% off your entry. Together, we are beating cancer. T's and C's apply.
This is 40-year-old Kathy, mother of two and self-confessed telly addict.
Ready? Oh, look at you. That's brilliant. Well done.
This is also Kathy, working as part of a team to keep things calm at her local prison.
Come on. Listen, speak to me.
And helping someone's son write his first letter home in 8 months.
Well done. You should be really proud.
Thank you, miss.
An extraordinary job done by someone like you. Search prison jobs now.
It's hard to concentrate when you're worried about your health. It can feel like there's a wall between you and the rest of the world. Like you can't be fully present.
Hello, AXA Health. How can I help?
At AXA Health Insurance, we build our teams with people who care. So when you need us, we're here to support you. For cover that cares, search AXA Health Insurance. Pre-existing conditions are not covered.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973.
Coming to your calls in a moment, Bob, you're going to be the first caller on that. Then we're going to hear from our other fuel trackers. Remember, we've heard from Scotland and from London in the first hour. We're off to the southwest and we're off to the northeast in a few moments' time. Bob, you're the first caller on this. We just quickly looked up the profits of BP. Now, I love profits. I'm all for profits. Because profits means that companies can hopefully invest and they can build new stores or new petrol stations or whatever, which provides jobs. So profit is not a dirty word for me at all. However, BP's last recorded annual profits, and this is profit, I repeat, profit, £5.5 billion. Now, if, and I'm sure we're going to hear prices are soaring again in the other two areas, as we did in the first hour this morning in London and Scotland, is there an argument for a profit cap? It was put forward by the government's cost of living czar, who hopefully we're going to hear from tomorrow, Richard Walker, the man who runs Iceland. As I said on the television, that's the company, not the country. But there was no interest at all whatsoever. The government slapping down the idea. Could it work? Bob's in Haywards Heath. What's the point you want to make about fuel, about petrol, Bob? Morning to you.
Yeah, good morning, Nick.
Hello.
Good morning to you.
Yes,
yeah,
sir.
This the petrol that they've had, they're selling now, is that they brought over a year ago when the barrel was about 85, whatever it was.
I don't know, it would be a year ago. I mean, certainly it would be a couple of months. Would it be a year ago, do you think, Bob? Really?
I think they can store it for
some time. I'm not in fuel storage, so I don't know. The point you want to make, I think I know where we're going with this, but go ahead. Yep.
Yeah. Well, they're profiteering from it. Of course, they've seen the opportunity to whack the price up.
Yeah.
But, today the government's got a COBRA meeting, and I don't think anything's going to come from that whatsoever. Because all they'll do is, we'll review it. And that seems to be the famous line. They always want to review something.
When you heard the Chancellor say earlier this month that they're going to task the CMA, that's the Competition and Markets Authority, and they will come down on anybody who's seen to be profiteering, when you hear they're going to do all they can with regards to the cost of living for all of us... I'm sure there'll be a lot of hot air at COBRA today. It won't move the dial for your life. I don't think it'll move the dial for my life, Bob.
It won't at all.
I think I agree with you. Thanks for that. All right, it's appropriate then. Bob, thanks. You've got us talking fuel, so let's go to...
Nick Ferrari's Fuel Tracker on LBC.
And there's Gasolina playing again. Now we're off to the northeast to my friend Mohammed, who's in South Shields. Now, when we first started this, you could get a litre of unleaded at £1.31.9, diesel £1.33.9. When we last spoke, just over a week ago, it was at £1.43.9 and £1.64.9. And we're off to Mohammed now for today's prices. Morning, sport. What have we got? Morning to you.
Well, put more money in your wallets, Nick, and girls, you need to put more money in your handbags. Unleaded, 146.9.
Yep.
Diesel, 176.9.
Wow, that's a massive... Have you got a house? You got a flat? You got a new home?
Yeah, I've got a new flat.
So. That's the important thing. Mohammed, thank you. 146.9. So that is an increase of 3p since last week on unleaded and diesel. If you're one of those you unlucky trucker, that's an increase of 12p on diesel. Let's round off our fuel trackers. We are off to Mark down in Plymouth. G'day, Mark. Now, when we started with you, sir, it was 133.9 and 140.9 for unleaded and diesel. When we last spoke, that had crept up to 142.9 unleaded. 158.9 diesel. Mark, g'day. Where do we find ourselves now?
Good morning, Nick. Hiya. Petrol's now 144.9.
2p.
And diesel is 166.9.
Good grief, that's another 8p drive. Thanks for that. Safe driving to you, Mark, my fuel tracker down in the southwest. So there, in that area, since we began, unleaded is up 11. Diesel is up 26p since we started a litre. And that's about 2 weeks. I'll get the start date. I've written it in the other piece of paper. But don't worry, the government says they're clamping down. I mean, it's not even near the truth. It's a downright lie. And the government minister saying, oh, yes, we're taking measures. I can't wait to speak to the Chancellor or the Prime Minister about this. Just take a drive down the road, see what is happening. And that diesel price, I'll just put it down, I'll pick it up again now. That diesel price, so that's up 26p in the southwest since we started. It's up 21p in the northeast. It's up 31p in Scotland since we started. And it's up... where are we? It's up 22p in London. And that's where all your goods get shipped on. We'll come back to the conversation. But there are other stories to have. And this can best be described as a puzzling one. Not familiar with her work. That is, of course, Chappell Roan, but she's accused of scoring a Roan goal as she's been banned from performing at a festival in Brazil. One of her security guards allegedly made Jude Lauter's daughter cry. Stay with me. Now, Ms. Roan was staying in the same hotel in Sao Paulo as the family of Brazilian footballer Jorginho, if I'm saying that correctly, whose wife shares a child with Jude Law from a previous relationship. And they were due to watch the pop star perform at the festival in Brazil yesterday. But the former Chelsea and Arsenal player took to Instagram to describe, quotes, a very upsetting situation during breakfast, which left his 11-year-old stepdaughter extremely shaken. And I quote, the artist walked past their table. My daughter, like any child, got excited and just wanted to make sure it was really her. She simply walked past the singer's table, looked to confirm it was her, and went back to sit with her mum. The football player then said a security guard later came over to the table where his wife, the singer Catherine Harding and his stepdaughter, who we can identify as Ada, were sitting, and accused them of harassment. The security guard began speaking in an extremely aggressive manner to both my wife and my daughter, saying she shouldn't allow my daughter to disrespect or harass other people. Well, Chapel Roan has subsequently posted this video on her Instagram account.
I didn't even see a woman and a child. Like, I did not, no one came up to me. No one bothered me. Like, I was just sitting at breakfast in my hotel. I think these people were staying at the hotel as well. So the fact that, like, a security guard who was, I did not ask the security guard to go up and talk to this mother and child. They did not come up to me. They weren't doing anything. It's unfair for security to just assume someone doesn't have good intentions when they have no reason to believe because there's no action even taken. Like, I do not hate people who are fans of my music. I do not hate children. Like, that is crazy. I'm sorry to the mother and child that someone was assuming something, that you would do something, and that if you felt uncomfortable, that makes me really sad. You did not deserve that.
Emily Watkins is a freelance journalist who writes regularly about celebrity culture and music for titles such as The Eye Paper, Grazia and The Independent, and joins me now. If you've got young children and they see a star they love, football player, singer, film star, what's the most appropriate behaviour, Emily? Good morning.
Hi, good morning. Good question. I mean, I certainly don't think Georgina's stepdaughter did anything inappropriate. I mean, I think going to check that it's, you know, your idol really sitting there must be terribly exciting. It could do far worse than that.
How much privacy does a celebrity deserve? How much does he, she actually get?
I tend to be on Chapel's side with this one. I think celebrities are entitled to probably slightly less privacy than the rest of us, given their public personas, but boundaries are really important, and they, you know, remain private people when they're not performing. And I think in this case, we're talking about bad behaviour from a security guard rather than from a celebrity, though.
How likely is it that she didn't know what her security staff were doing?
I totally believe her on that score, and I think she didn't know, and it sounds like he wasn't her direct employee.
Something like this, noting, I would imagine, and you'll help me here, I know I've heard her songs, but I don't know her fan base. Presumably 11-year-old girl is very much Chapel Roan's fan base. How damaging could this be?
Well, it could be damaging, but I really hope it isn't. It doesn't sound to me like Chapel's done anything wrong, as I say, that we're talking about.
Although the organisers, clearly the organisers have found for the girl, haven't they? Because they've banned her from singing at this festival.
They have, which is a shame. I don't think that's the right thing to have done. I don't think that's right.
How does she put it right, lastly?
I think her video goes a long way to that, to making it clear what she hoped would happen, how what went wrong wasn't her fault.
Emily Watkins, freelance journalist, writes for titles such as Grazia and The Eye. Thank you for that. Let's do it the other way around. When have you met a celebrity and they went completely out of their way to pose for a picture, sign an autograph, send a selfie, send a voice note to your sons, your daughters, whatever it might be? It's a bit difficult to ask when has a celebrity been horrible to you, because then you'll phone up and tell us most appalling stories and I'll end up being sued by Alan Sugar or something like that, which I really don't fancy that much. So can we do it the other way if we can? And I'll tell you a story about when my wife and I went shopping in Sainsbury's after the news. No, we didn't go shopping after the news. We went shopping on Saturday. But something that's never, ever happened to me before. And I'll tell you that story about Sainsbury's after the news. It's 8:31. You're listening to Breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari, here on LBC. News headlines, Dominic Ellis.
The Prime Minister has said anti-Semitism has no place in our society after four Jewish community ambulances were set on fire in North London. Police are treating the attack in Golders Green overnight as a suspected hate crime. Sir Keir Starmer is preparing to lead a Cobra meeting to discuss the economic impact of the conflict in Iran. on. Cabinet ministers, as well as the Governor of the Bank of England, are due to meet this afternoon. And changes to short-term prison sentences have come into force in an effort to ease overcrowding in England and Wales. It means most offenders that would have received up to a year in prison will instead receive a suspended sentence. LBC weather, sunny spells for large parts of England and Wales. Some outbreaks of rain for northern Scotland, a high of 15 degrees.
Hey, smart speaker. Play LBC.
Good morning, I'm Nick Ferrari. It's time to get to your calls.
First time caller. A little bit nervous.
Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for taking my call.
There is no question. Ending the war is the quickest way to reduce the cost of living. That is my first priority.
Hear every side of the story.
I would not be surprised if they put troops on the ground.
Really, really sad what we've become as a country. Basically, an example of how our country is just in decline.
Starmer is going to have to get involved, but in a very limited way, because I think we are quite exposed.
I'm at the petrol station and it's just cost me nearly £100 to fill up half.
Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app. LBC, leading Britain's conversation.
This is 40-year-old Kathy, mother of two and self-confessed telly addict.
Daddy? Oh, look at you, that's brilliant. Well done.
This is also Kathy, working as part of a team to keep things calm at her local prison. And helping someone's son write his first letter home in 8 months.
Well done, you should be really proud.
Thank you, miss.
An extraordinary job, done by someone like you. Search prison jobs now.
At Kia, we know that inspiration begins with a first. Your first job, your first love, your first home. Now it's time for your first drive in the new Kia EV2 at our First Drive weekends. It's your chance to be one of the first to test drive the Kia EV2 with its innovative technology and elegant eye-catching design. It's small in size, but big in personality. Discover what driving electric really means. Search Kia First Drive weekends to reserve your place today.
Kia, movement that inspires.
It's happened again. All you said was barrel leg. Now she's looking at you like Nadine isn't your real name. Look at you go, as you explain volume cocoon is a key shape for the season. 100% cotton, you say? No way, she says. And then, oh, a little extension of the trouser leg. Check out that pleat. Then you break the news.
They're from Primark. Only £16.
Be a good friend.
You can borrow them.
Hopefully she'll forget that. Shockingly chic for £16. That's so Primark. Available in-store and on click and collect.
Last.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
Right, we're going to talk about very important... Well, I'll tell you about the story about myself and Sainsbury's in just a moment. We'll talk about fuel as well. We've got an important conversation to have concerning the front page of one of the newspapers yesterday. Indeed, it was what they call the splash or the main story with the headline in the Sunday Times. I don't always go to church, but I do believe, says William, as in Prince William, revealing he has what he calls a quiet faith and a commitment to the Church of England in a move that finally redefines his role as obviously the supreme governor. As and when... the sad day occurs that his father dies, and William moves to be the monarch. So what do we take from that? And can you be a Christian and not practice or profess your faith as much as you, I'll put this word in single quotes, as you should? Well, let's get into that now with the Reverend Dr. Ian Poole, who's a writer, theologian and member of the General Synod. If you didn't see the headline at the time, you certainly will have done by now or heard the story. How did you react? Good morning to you, Doctor.
Good morning. I with mixed feelings, actually. At one level, I want to say it's not for me to be in a position to judge someone's faith. But yes, I do think that being part of the local Christian community is integral to Christian faith. It's fascinating to hear conversations about this, particularly in the context of our debates about, you know, is Britain a Christian country? What's our relationship with our Christian heritage? I've just been reading Bijan Omrani's book, God is an Englishman, which is a very off-putting title, but he's just pointing out that the very fabric, I mean, it suggests that...
Well, Dr. God surely is an Englishman. I've watched cricket. He has to be an Englishman. Come on.
Warm beer and tea in the afternoon, exactly. Yeah, absolutely. What God intended. Christian faith is not merely about a set of values. It is about a set of values, but it's about a set of values that flow from relationship with God. I mean, yesterday evening I was just preaching on this, that when we come to faith, we discover that we are transformed by God's love, and it's out of that that our values change. And I realise that many people want to say, well, I hold Christian values, by which they usually mean I like being nice to people, which is not really actually precisely what the Christian faith is about. I just think it's really interesting that William said, I just read read a few articles this morning. Mm. I believe in the church. Well, that's great. I'm really glad to hear that. But actually, Christian faith is actually about believing in Jesus Christ and having him transform your life. And then the church is people who gather together, who share that belief and work it out together and learn from one another and gather to read the scriptures, as the Church of England says.
Should you attend church out of a sense of duty or because you want to be there, Doctor? That stumped him.
Well, duty to what? That's the question. I mean,
well, I suppose in this instance, duty to his role as the future sovereign, yeah, as the future monarch.
Yeah, it is. And by the way, it's worth clarifying. People say, oh, and I've heard it said that Charles is the head of the monarch is the head of the church. No, the head of the church is Jesus Christ.
Right.
The monarch is the supreme governor of the Church of England.
Yeah, or she, yeah.
The and governor. We have the same ambivalence about that as we do about the fact that we have a constitutional monarchy. I mean, and, you know, the monarch has to sign off every law in Parliament. But does that mean that they believe everything that Parliament decides? I think it's really good that he says he wants to take this role seriously when his time comes. I think we will miss the lack of a lively personal faith that we're beginning to see in Charles, we particularly saw in Queen Elizabeth. I mean, I think many of us were just so heartened and encouraged that she, on her Christmas, you know, it's part of our English tradition that we always go and listen to the Queen's speech on Christmas Day at 3 o'clock. And it was wonderful to hear her talk about the difference that her faith made, particularly, you know, through her Annus Horribilis, and actually that faith in God had held her strong and made a real difference. And that is really what we need from a monarch. It's not going to be a complete crisis if the monarch does not have that personal faith, but I think it makes a real difference.
We're having this conversation just days away from, is it an enthronement that happens with the new Archbishop?
It is,
is it right? Thank goodness I got that right. How significant is the enthronement, of course, of the recipient later today? Later this week, I'm sorry, Doctor.
Yes, it is significant, but it's the last part of quite a complex process. You know, she was announced at the end of last year that she would be Archbishop of Canterbury. It is going
to
be
interesting. What does Dr. Sarah Mullally bring to the church and to the whole dynamic of the C of E, do you think, Doctor?
She's not a doctor, by the way.
I'm so sorry. I'm confusing my doctors. She's a dame. She's a dame. She's Dame Sarah Mullally. And you're not a dame, you're a doctor. So now we're getting someplace.
I'm definitely not a dame. She says she's going to bring quiet calmness. She's not got any big ideas. I think we're all exhausted by Justin Welby's big ideas. And we're looking forward to a period of calm. She's not a theologian, and I think for me personally, that is a concern. We do actually think theology matters in the Church of England, but I'm hoping we're going to have 6 years of calm steadiness without too much hassle.
Well, if I'm allowed to say amen to that, I agree with you. Lastly, what would a theologian bring then? What is the skill set or the discipline that maybe a theologian would apply to the role of ABC, Archbishop of Canterbury?
I think it's actually saying that in the end, the decisions we make practically and pragmatically flow from our theological understanding of who God is, what God has called us to do, how he sees the world, and what he wants his people to be. In the end, those are the kind of questions. At one level, we're all theologians because we're all asking those kind of questions. But actually, what we don't want to do is collapse into a kind of missional pragmatism or an ethical pragmatism and saying, well, let's do what's easiest. We actually need to do what God calls us to do and what is right. And that's why theology really matters.
Thoroughly enjoyed our conversation this morning. Thank you for taking my call. Reverend Dr. Ian Paul is a writer, theologian, and sits with the General Synod, member of the General Synod. We will, of course, be marking those events later this week when we have a new Archbishop of Canterbury, having just completed her pilgrimage from London all the way down to Canterbury, 89 miles. I think she did it in 6 days, but don't quote me, which is a tremendous way to start in that post, of course. Right, let's talk fuel prices. That's what's affecting you. Well, of course, some of you will happily take your call. Are you like me? I do have a faith. Undoubtedly, I have a faith as a Christian, but I don't profess it or demonstrate it as much as I should because I don't attend church as much as I probably should. But where are you on the idea that you can have a faith, you can have a quiet faith and a commitment, but you don't go to church? There may be many of you. Let's talk fuel. Joe's in Romford. Joe, you're on the radio. Good morning.
Good morning. You spoke about profit caps, Nick. I've mentioned that to you ages ago, and you shut me down very quickly.
Well, I'm sorry if you thought I was rather abrupt, and I apologise if I was brusque, but it was possibly not at the time when we had the Strait of Hormuz shut.
No, it was to do with companies like gas and water, utility companies.
Oh, gas, did you say?
Yeah, the profiteering from the utility companies that happened. So, for me personally, people love to use the word equality. It's a label, really, that just fits society's ears. But if you want to talk equality, there should be a profit cap. If you look at something as simple as football, and you capped the salaries to, let's say, 140 grand a month. Because no human being really needs more than that.
No,
really,
they shouldn't,
to get
really,
by. And we're talking about after tax, 140 grand a month. Mm. You capped a club. You just had the Carabao Cup. So even if you said someone like City and United,
Arsenal.
You capped their.
But in
Manchester, let's just use the City of Manchester. You capped those two clubs
at
a £14 million profit per year. The money left over goes back into the club, goes back into the infrastructure. Families can take their children there. Families can afford to buy the food that's there. And that's levelling up, surely.
Sorry, I don't understand. So all the other profits would go to food banks in Manchester, would they? Is that what you're saying?
No, what I mean is as far as the fuel goes...
No, but for Manchester... So Manchester United and Manchester City, their profits would be capped at 14 million. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, after tax and outgoings, they're capped at 14 million.
I don't know. I understand that Old Trafford could probably do with a bit of a facelift. Well, you're not going that won't allow them to build a new stadium or improve the current stadium if you cap their profits at 14, would it?
No, but the amount of money that is a £1 billion company. The amount of money that's left over goes back into the system. It'd be no different with fuel. If you cap the profits, I mean, the amount that government takes off a tax is ridiculous. If you cap the profits for the fuel, that money left over goes back into the system.
Yes.
To help the citizens level up.
But when you need to do major capital expenditure, how will you fund that? Let's just, for the purpose of debate, say that Manchester United clears 100 million... I've no idea, but it makes 100 million pounds. It makes 100... And it wants to put quite a few years of that towards building a new stadium or improving Old Trafford. But every year they have to give 86 to food banks. They'll never expand their stadium, will they?
But you wouldn't need to give them to food banks, because
they'll never redevelop Old Trafford if you do that, will they?
You can, because
how?
You can save money in other areas. You can have other investors. You can have other people that will sponsor.
I don't understand why. I mean, Joe, look, if I was brusque when you first suggested it, I apologise. I can see the argument now briefly, and we hope to be able to speak to the man who floated the idea yesterday, Richard Walker, or Lord Walker, who's the executive chairman of Iceland, and he certainly knows about how to build and expand a business. But whether that way you take would work, I'm not sure. Joe, thank you. Clive in Bexley Heath, you want to talk fuel. What's your story, Clive? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. How are you?
Good, thank you. What do you want to tell me?
I travel a lot from Bexley Heath to Ramsgate every day, and there's a service station on the A2.
Mm-hmm.
And last week, their unleaded was 171.9.
Right, okay.
And diesel was 189.9.
Now, the government says they're not going to allow any gouging or profiteering. What do you say
they are.
That's right in front of them, isn't it?
Yeah. Why don't they see that? I know it's a services on an A2, and their prices are normally quite high.
Yeah, of course. It's a bit like a motorway. Just for those who don't realise, the A2 is... That bit is probably double lane? Is it the one just past Dartford?
No, double lane. It's the one you come under the M25 at Dartford,
and it's
the first service you get.
On the left-hand side.
You go across the bridge, up by Bluebell Hill, and it's that first one you meet.
Yeah.
I think it's the flower one. I don't want to say the name.
No, I know exactly. Yeah, so it is a bit like a motorway in that, you know, you're restricted from sort of turning off. You're exactly right.
Yes.
So they're going to have a Cobra, and do you think it will mean anything?
No, he won't do it. As one of your callers said, they'll just go, oh, yes, this is what it is. This is what we're not going to do, but this is what we're going to say to people we're going to do.
Safe driving, Clive. That's quite a drive. Bexley Heath to Ramsgate. Well, stay safe on those roads. And coming up in a related story in the next hour.
With concerns about Iran's missile capability and President Trump warning he'll obliterate their infrastructure, what are Iranians in the UK making of developments? I'm LBC's Henry Riley in Finchley.
And that's in the next hour. It's 8:46 now, LBC News headlines then. Dominic Ellis.
The Prime Minister says anti-Semitism has no place in our society after four Jewish community ambulances were set on fire in North London. Sir Keir Starmer is preparing to lead a Cobra meeting to discuss the economic impact of the conflict in Iran. And major changes to short-term prison sentences have come into force in England and Wales. LBC weather, sunny spells for large parts of England and Wales. Outbreaks of rain for the north of Scotland, a high of 15 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. The A40 is closed both ways between the Northern Roundabout and the Marylebone Flyover for the ongoing works. There are lengthy delays both ways. Lots of traffic's using the A4 instead, so that's extra busy eastbound from the Chiswick Roundabout to Earls Court. Then also delays on the M4 eastbound just after the Heston services. A car was on fire earlier. One lane remains closed and there are queues on the approach. On the M25, it's very busy clockwise to junction 30 at the A13. It's because a lorry's broken down at the start of the exit slip road, so that's causing delays back into the main carriageway. Also problems on the underground. There are minor delays on the Jubilee line, and that was after a train broke down earlier at Bermondsey.
This is LBC.
Right, who's all in for Cancer Research UK's Race for Life?
Sunday Leaguers, dog lovers, bait clubbers, banger dancers, baby ravers, potters.
Whether you walk it, jog it, or run it, go all in against cancer. All in to help fund life-saving research. Sign up now and save 50% off entry to your local 3K, 5K, 10K or Pretty Muddy event. Search Race for Life. Discount ends April 19th, 2026. T's and C's apply.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060973. This is LBC.
My name is Paul and this is my NHS story. I started to notice that the hip was becoming numb. The GP referred me for an x-ray, and just being informed, being kept in the loop, I feel much better in myself and I feel confident about how the future is going to unfold.
The government is opening new community diagnostic centres, with many already available 12 hours a day, 7 days a week, so the NHS can be there for all of us when we need it. Find your closest one at gov.uk/NHS Fit for the Future. Available England-wide.
Jay here knows that Zoopla can provide valuations for any home in the UK, so we can see what that new couple across the road might have paid.
Ooh la la.
Have a nose at what the curtain twitchers next door could sell for. And even see what his own place is worth.
Cool, look at that.
Plus, Zoopla lets you find and compare local estate agents if you do decide to sell up. Think of all those new neighbours you'll be able to snoop on, Jay. If you want to know, just ask Zoopla.
Ugh, drizzly drive to the office. Ever wanted to just shove some bits in a bag? Hop on a plane and land somewhere magnifique? Well, with Kayak Explore, it's easier than ever. Whatever your budget, wherever you want to go, simply set the amount you want to spend and Kayak finds flights that fit. Easy breezy. Search Kayak and go see for yourself.
Hi, I'm looking for a pair of jeans.
Right. Low slung, slouchy, wide leg, bower leg, curved leg, flared, straight or skinny.
Blue?
Fashion. It's hard to keep on top of. Other things, like the upcoming changes to renting, are a bit easier. If you are a landlord and you have existing tenants, you must send them a copy of the government's information sheet by the 31st of May, or risk a fine. Find out more at gov.uk/renting-is-changing.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
10 before 9 now. Upon my apologies to Pam in Worcester Park, who's a regular correspondent or contributor, who says, will you tell your celebrity story? Because I need to get to work. Pam, then this is for you. Look, I'm not, but you do get a little bit of recognition. This is after, and of course I'm not on the same level as Chapel Roan. She's apparently in trouble because reportedly her security guard was a bit rude to an 11-year-old girl who happened to be the child of Jude Law and the stepdaughter of Jochino, if that's how you say it. Anyway. So on the weekend I was shopping with my wife in Sainsbury's at Greenwich. Now just to show, I'd been to Aldi in Catford early last week and I have been to Marks and Spencer, so I'm very promiscuous with my shopping. And as I'm at the checkout and my new wife is standing by my side, this lovely woman looks up and says, I just tell you, I loved your wedding dance. It's the funniest thing I've ever seen. Now, I've been asked many things like, my wife's been asked, how do you put up with him? You know, how on earth? And that's normally the line the politicians say, how do you put? But no one's ever said, that was the funniest thing I've ever seen. Now, this morning, the show I'm on, became faintly obsessed with this. Mildly obsessed with this wedding video, should you so desire. The reason we've delayed it is now available. I'm urging you not to see it, by the way. Please don't see the video, my opening dance. But I say this because it, and it's lovely. And the woman then said, do you mind people talking to you? She said, I saw someone stopped you and asked for a picture in the store earlier. That's how I knew you were in. Of course I don't. No, it's a fantastic... I mean, gosh, they pay my rent, effectively. And they're my listeners and callers and readers or whatever it might be. So I do think, not that I'm in anywhere near that position. The only time I've railed against it, the only time, and even then I was polite, was I'm sitting in a private room in a hospital in Kent by my mother's bedside who's dying, and someone came up and asked for a selfie. And even then I was fairly, I said, look, this is not the time. I think they backed off. That's the only time I've ever balked at it. And I think with your mother dying in a bed, you're probably allowed that one. So anyway, that was this weekend. The winning video, if you're so minded, of the first dance is available on lbc.co.uk. As we explore stories, and it was very nice meeting that young woman down in Sainsbury's, as we explore stories of when celebrities are nice. Polly in Dartford. Polly, who are we talking about? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Yeah, we're talking about Rob Brydon.
Oh, top bloke. I bumped into him in a petrol station in Twickenham.
Yeah, my husband was lucky enough to have him in his taxi one day in London. Less than 24 hours later, he picked him up again, and they kind of recognised each other.
Right.
So my husband said to him, I hope you're not stalking me, Rob. This is the second time I've had you in my cab in 24 hours. So they got talking, and he said, my son's never going to believe that I've had you in my cab, like, twice in 24 hours.
Right.
And when he got out, totally unprompted, Rob said, get your phone out, because I'll do a video for him.
Oh.
So they stand together with their arms around each other, and he says, hello, Thomas, this is Rob Brydon. I can assure you, I'm not stalking your father. He's perfectly safe, and he will be back home with you again this evening.
Isn't that lovely? I just thought
that was so lovely, totally unprompted. And also to your good self, good man.
Yeah.
I worked in Marks and Spencer's in a certain big super place where you go to regularly.
Yes, yes. Where the water's a certain colour.
Yes.
Yeah.
And you were coming down the escalators, and I was coming up, and I looked at you, and I said, oh, my God, it's you. So I listened to you every morning, and you just looked over, and you said, bless you, you are a lovely lady.
There you go, that's me. Oh, thank goodness. Yeah. Oh, thank God that went on. Rob Brydon's very funny. Best wishes to your family. I was at a lunch with Rob Brydon once, and I was sitting there with another person who said to Rob Brydon, a similar line to what you just said, Polly, my son is not going to believe... And so Rob Brydon said, well, if you want to, if he's out, call him, and I'll say hi. So the woman said, oh, wow. I'm going to say the son's name is Tim. I can't remember. Tim, you're not going to believe it. I am sitting next to Rob Brydon, and he wants to talk to you. No, honestly, darling, honestly, he does, truly. Hands the phone over, Rob Brydon says, hello, hello, yeah, chat, chat, chat. And then I swear, no, I can't tell you what happened on that fishing trip. Straight away into that line, which if you watch Gavin and Stacey, you'll know the gag. Polly, thank you. We're lifting the mood a little bit because with the world on the brink of war, we're talking about when celebrities go the extra mile just to be decent. Anne's in Liverpool. Who are we talking about, Anne? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Hope you're well.
Yeah, not bad.
I'm talking about Charlie Mullins.
Oh, the super plumber.
Yeah, it's a bit of a strange one. I used to be quite prolific on Twitter a couple of years ago when I was going through chemotherapy.
Ooh.
It was kind of my outlet.
Right.
And my daughter was doing a master's degree in Liverpool City Centre.
Okay.
And while she was studying, she worked in a bar. And at the end of the night, they're all cleaning up. And she put a phone on the bar while they were chatting away. And unfortunately, someone took it.
Oh, no.
So the following morning
How old was the girl at this time?
Ellie was about 24. She was doing a master's degree. Oh,
so she lived on her phone. Her whole world
lived
was on that
lived
phone.
On her phone, yeah, you know, studying, working two jobs, you know, really, she's the most gorgeous kid in the world.
Of course.
So on Twitter the following morning, I'm kind of having a bit of a rant, saying, bloody hell, you know, come on. She's trying her hardest here, and, you know, without her phone.
Mm.
And I got a message about an hour later from a lady saying, hi, I'm Charlie Mullins, PA. Charlie says he's got a phone. Would you be interested? And I said, oh, my goodness, that'd be great. You know, thinking it'd be a tatty old second-hand phone, but I was thinking anything's better than
nothing. Yeah, of course, yeah, yeah.
And the following day, a brand-new, top-of-the-range iPhone arrived for her.
Oh, what a top bloke.
But I'd like to say, he and I are on polar opposites on all of our political views. I would turn around and say, what an absolutely wonderful person. And it made such a difference to my daughter. So it just shows that we can all be a bit different, but kindness will always win.
Love it. I sense you're more to the left. Can I ask you one question? How happy
Absolutely.
Are you?
Absolutely.
How happy are you with the current Labour government, Anne?
I'm not.
No.
I'm not. And my daughter particularly isn't. I think it's going to be green for us.
Oh,
and
seriously?
I've been a member of the Labour Party. I just think it's a mess, Nick. And unfortunately, even, you know, sort of the optics aren't good. They're not getting any of it right at the moment.
Give my love to your daughter. What a great story. Well done, Charlie Mullins. Great story for Rob Brydon, Charlie Mullins. We're just for another couple of minutes, then don't worry. We will go back, I'm afraid, to the major events and why we weren't warned of the strike on Diego Garcia. But Rose is in Ealing. Rose, who are we going to talk about with you? Good morning.
Good morning. We're going to talk about UV40.
Ah.
Now,
is that there's a rat in my kitchen? Is that there's a rat in my kitchen? What
yes,
am I going to do?
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Yes. The person I've spoken to just now has no idea who they are. So they need to be punished.
Well, you should know. I mean, she yes. struggles to know who Keir Starmer is on some days. Anyway, go on.
Oh, dear. Right, so I've literally just got back from Rotterdam.
What, today?
From last night.
Right.
Very late last night.
Yes.
And I went there to see UB40 perform at the Ahoy.
Are they still alive? And
my goodness, they are alive and kicking
you did hear
and
that. Sorry,
thriving
go on.
and growing. And so we happened to meet them during the concert, if you know what I mean. They acknowledged us in the concert from the barriers. They arranged for us to have after-party tickets.
Oh, my goodness.
I'm telling you, individually...
Is it Robin and Annie Campbell? Is that
No, not at all. It's Robin Campbell.
Robin. Oh, sorry.
Robin Campbell. Matt Doyle is the singer.
Oh, right. Robin
Martin
Campbell.
Martin Meredith on the saxophone.
This is like
right.
Who's on drums?
Jimmy Brown.
Oh, wow, she does know. Gosh, okay. And so they were just lovely, were they?
No, they were more than lovely. They were attentive. They picked us out. They know most of their fans by name, believe it or not. They are so, so kind. No airs and graces. I don't know any band, and I follow quite a few, who are more attentive than they. I'm challenged.
So you went... Have you followed them around the world or just around Europe?
Around Europe.
Yeah. Where else have you been?
Glasgow, Birmingham, Ahoy, okay. Everywhere.
Right.
Everywhere. But that is the band to see. They're going to be touring the UK from June. Please get your tickets.
Well, I don't think
I'm not being paid for this.
It won't be too hard.
You will not
be
disappointed.
It won't be that difficult to get tickets. I mean, we're not talking Oasis, are we? With all greatest respect.
Ahoy was sold out.
All right, Mel. Listen, I'm glad you're safely back from Rotterdam. Thank you. That's possibly UB40, Rob Brydon, Charlie Mullins. That's the way to treat your audience, not as allegedly Chapel Roan did. I'm afraid we come back to the realities of life. Why did it take roughly 30 hours for the great British public to be informed of the missile strike on some of our military bases? The question I put to Matthew Pennycook.
Well, I think as a general point of principle, Nick, we don't routinely comment on threats due to intelligence sharing. We've now confirmed, as appropriate, that missiles were heading towards Diego Garcia. I want to be very clear that he didn't hit the base.
Plus, as we count down the hours to that deadline when supposedly Donald Trump will wipe out Iran power supplies, what is the Iranian community in London saying? And are these stories true that Fergie, as in the former Duchess of York, was trying to clone the Queen's corgis? Those stories are more after the news.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 9 o'clock. The Prime Minister has said anti-Semitism has no place in our society after four Jewish community ambulances were set on fire in North London. Police are treating the attack in Golders Green overnight as a hate crime. Mark Gardner is from the Community Security Trust, which provides security to the UK's Jewish communities. He's told LBC it's left him feeling completely dejected.
It's very similar to a series of attacks that have taken place in Amsterdam and Rotterdam in the Netherlands and also in Liège in Belgium, where there have been arson attacks and improvised explosive attacks in the middle of the night designed to cause absolute fear and distress to Jewish communities. But this isn't only about Jews. This is also an attack on British people. There's no distinction in this case between Jews and British people.
Sir Keir Starmer is to chair an emergency COBRA meeting to address the economic impacts of the war in Iran. Senior cabinet ministers, as well as the governor of the Bank of England, are due to meet this afternoon. The government says it won't tolerate drivers being ripped off at the pumps due to rising oil prices. Government Minister Matthew Pennycook has told Nick this morning that so-called price gouging will be on the agenda today.
This government will not accept profiteering off the back
of... But they're doing it, Minister, surely. And I'll quote you unleaded. 139.9 prior to the problem, to this morning, 148.9. And diesel, the same place in London, 1559 employs 1.669. They're already profiteering, aren't they, Minister?
Well, there's, I think, an important difference between the impact of the crisis and how it feeds through and what is profiteering. But that's what the CMA has put fuel retailers on notice about.
Changes to short-term prison sentences have come into force this morning in an effort to ease overcrowding in England and Wales. It means most offenders that would have received up to a year in prison will instead receive a suspended sentence. A man's become the first person to be charged under new legislation banning football fans from entering a match without a ticket. The law for England and Wales came into effect yesterday ahead of the League Cup final at Wembley. And seven locations are now being chosen for new towns in England. Ministers are promising to start building around 10,000 homes in areas including Leeds and Manchester before the next general election. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 155 points at 9,760. The pound buys $1.33 and €1.15. LBC weather, sunny spells for large parts of England and Wales. Some outbreaks of rain for the north of Scotland. A high of 15 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
At Lidl, we won't be beaten on price on our deluxe hot cross buns. Like our Good Housekeeping Institute taste-approved indulgently cheesy buns. Ooh, or our deliciously rich and velvety triple chocolate buns. Lidl, more to value.
Price matched in most major UK supermarkets until 4th of the 4th. See Lidl.co.uk/spendless. While stocks last, exclusions apply.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Morning to you, 3 minutes after nine, Monday, March the 23rd. After that interesting diversion involving celebrities, we're back to the news agenda. And the question, why were we kept in the dark for so long about that Iranian attack on Diego Garcia? We'll be looking at that. Plus, as the hours tick down to that deadline, yet another deadline imposed by President Trump, this time to blast all the Iranian power supplies, which is a war crime, by the way. How is the reaction now among the Iranian community here in London? In other news, the exclusive report that Hugh Edwards, the disgraced sex offender newsreader, is planning a return to TV. We don't know. He's not going to come back and read the 6 o'clock news. Don't worry about that. But would you actually want to see him? Do you have any level of sympathy for Hugh Edwards? This, as of course we get ready, we're on the eve of that docu-series, as they call them now, airing. We'll give you more details on that. And it's the headline that's got everything. It's got royals, it's got showbiz, it's got science. Fergie, as in the former Duchess of York, Fergie plot to clone the Queen's corgis for reality TV. But can you really clone a dog, let alone the Queen's corgis? It's later in the hour.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
They did it with Dolly the sheep. I suppose they could have done it with some of the Queen's corgis. This is the front page of two of your newspapers. You might have seen that yesterday morning. The reality behind the headline. Fergie's secret plan to clone the Queen's corgis. That's coming up later. Now to other matters. And it seems a fair question. If you look at the timeline of when we were actually, when we, the great British public, were informed of exactly what happened. It was 2 o'clock on Friday morning that Tehran launched two rockets at Diego Garcia. This was finally confirmed late Saturday morning, roughly 30 hours later, by the government. This despite the fact that it had already been reported by the Wall Street Journal and CNN and confirmed by both US and Israel military sources or military departments. So they, the government, finally said that it had happened some 30 hours later. Now, you're going to hear the... I won't use the word excuse, the justification, the rationale from the government minister in a moment. If you were watching TV yesterday, it was because they didn't want to share operational details with the Iranians. Well, I think even they woke up to the lunacy of that one. I think the Iranians knew they'd fired them. The key here, of course, is the distance travelled. I'll get into that for you in just a moment. An Israel briefing on the weekend that Tehran now is in a position to fire missiles, or Iran, I should say, Iranian regime, because they might not come from Tehran. I don't want to mislead you. that would have the capability of striking European cities. I'll give you the tail of the tape, the distance of miles and kilometres involved in that in just a second. But to that delay in telling us exactly what had happened, when, why and how, questions I put to the housing minister, he was out talking about these seven new towns. That's been pretty much drowned out by their reluctance to share crucial details. So Matthew Pennycook's justification was...
Well, I think as a general point of principle, Nick, we don't routinely comment on threats due to intelligence sharing. We don't routinely give live commentary on incidents that have taken place. We've now confirmed, as appropriate, that missiles were heading towards Diego Garcia. I want to be very clear that he didn't hit the base. But I've been challenged on this numerous times this morning. I just think it's grossly irresponsible for a government minister to sit and to detail... the government's assessment of Iran's targeting or any other country's targeting. All the British people need to know is that we have the means, we have the resource necessary to defend this country from attacks on our soil or from abroad.
But all the government needs to do is watch CNN. Why should CNN tell the British public ahead of its government?
Well, as I say, in that particular example, we've confirmed the details, very top line, of what happened. But as I say, we don't give a routine running commentary on the threats we face or a particular instance in a fast-moving environment. I'm sure your viewers would appreciate why.
So one made it for 1,990 miles. How close to Diego Garcia did the other rocket get, ballistic missile get?
Again, Nick, I'm not going to confirm the precise locations of where the missiles reached. I don't think that's in the national interest for us to give that sort of running commentary. I understand why people are concerned. I understand why statements that have been made will cause a degree of anxiety. But the British people need to be assured that, as I say, we have the means necessary to defend this country. And as a government... After years in which previous administrations have run down our armed forces, we're finally investing in air and missile defence following the recommendations of the Strategic Defence Review.
Matthew Pennycook, the minister on the round. Now, yesterday, as I referenced earlier, it was Housing Minister Steve Reid, because if you've got British military bases under attack, you want to send for your housing minister. Why on earth would you have your defence secretary out, or possibly a foreign secretary, or even at a push your home secretary? No! Get the housing bloke out. That makes perfect sense. Nonsense, isn't it? And you may recall that he was saying on LBC and elsewhere over at the BBC, there's no specific assessment the Iranians are targeting the UK, or even could if they wanted to. So, who do you believe? Now, suspend, and I know this is going to be nigh on impossible for some of you, suspend your animosity towards Israel and the Israeli military services and Mossad, if you can, just briefly. Who do you think's more in tune with what's happening in Tehran? Israel stroke Mossad? Or the United Kingdom government? In whom would you put your faith? I know in whom I'd put my faith. So when Israel says, by the way, the capability of these missiles that they use, I'm terrible at pronunciations, Karamshar, if I'm saying that correctly, 2,400 miles. One fell into the ocean after 1,990 miles, headed towards Diego Garcia. The other was taken out by a US warship. They're declining to tell us how close or otherwise it was. The distance in miles from Tehran to Berlin is 2,100, so just about in the capability. The distance to London is 2,700, although, as we heard in the first hour of the show, and I'm no missile expert, if you took down the payload, if you lightened the payload, is the expression, if you lightened the payload, you're going to get more miles than 2,400, so you're starting possibly just to get over. But the question is, who do you believe? Israel's intelligence service or the housing minister? Well, I know what I think. We'll take your views on that in just a second. And this is important. And they, the government, have to realise that the time with social media now, with CNN, with it is not good enough to say we cannot share operational details. You've got British assets, as it's called, British interests, under attack, and you're not telling us, and we have to turn on the telly or go on Wall Street Journal online. But let's come back to matters here. As I've said already, the hours now, we are in hours ticking down to when supposedly, in a clear breach of international law, could blitz Iran's power facilities. So how's that going down back at home? LBC reporter Henry Riley has been with the Iranian community. He's returned. He went, you may recall, some weeks ago. He's returned to Finchley and joins us again. Henry, morning. What you got?
Yes, good morning, Nick. You're right. Here at the start of the month and now a few weeks since then to see what the mood is, whether anything has changed. It's estimated that there are close to 115,000 Iranian-born residents in the UK, the largest concentration of which live in the North London borough of Barnet. Here in Finchley, the local council believe that around 12,000 people who were born in Iran now live here, hence that affectionate nickname of Little Tehran that it is often referred to as. There are Persian restaurants, cafes, convenience stores, butchers, greengrocers and laundrettes. And this has been a hive of activity for the Iranian community. Ballard's Lane was one of those areas when the US and Israeli strikes were first reported that there were celebrations here on the streets. But as you referenced, has anything changed in the intervening weeks? Have the opinions of the Iranians who live here altered at all? I've been out and about this morning in the cafes, as you referenced. This is what locals have told me. Do you see Israel was saying that Iran could strike London? What do you think about that?
Never, ever. Never, ever. No.
You don't buy that?
Never, ever. No, never happened this. This is just the idea Israel is saying because they want to vote against the Iran. Never ever this happened.
And here on Ballard's Lane, we of course had people celebrating. What's the mood like now with the Iranian community?
Now a lot of Iranian is against of the war. You know, this regime killed a lot of young people, a lot of people. But the war is not the solution.
What do you make of everything that's happened over the weekend? There was stuff about Iran possibly hitting London, Donald Trump.
No. We love Donald Trump. We love Bibi.
You love Donald Trump?
Yeah. Because they helped the people in Iran and killed the leader.
My brother, my sister are still living in the Iran. Now a lot of Iranian people outside the Iran just is a voice for the Iranian people living inside because they don't have any internet. I think we are just voice for Iranian people inside my country. We are worried about for the UK government because all the time support the Ayatollah, but not exactly same rule, but sometimes for the behind the government. I don't know why. Because yeah. The last time I was voting for the Labour Party.
You're not sure.
Upset, yeah.
And Nick, members of the Iranian diaspora here have been gathering over the past few days to mark Nowruz, the Persian New Year.
Henry Riley reporting. Let's get into among your reactions. David's in Putney. David, whose line do you believe? Israel or the British government? Good morning.
I'll have to say good morning. I'll have to say that even if I suspend my animosity for the conflict in Gaza, we still have to acknowledge the fact that the move made by Israel and the US was made without any communication being made.
Mm-hmm.
These are people who are technically supposed to be considered allies, who communicated nothing and struck an all-girls school and killed a large number of people. Like, can we really suspend animosity to the fullest extent to be able to suggest that what fear-mongering Donald Trump is trying to use to suggest are weak is somehow misplaced?
David, the prime duty of the British government obviously is the protection of its citizens both here and overseas. And my question is whether we would believe a warning over what the government is telling us as regards our own people. That's the key.
Well, this is the thing. We have to deal with the fact that it's a fear-mongering warning that's being made.
So you don't believe
that is being made overseas to Diego Garcia.
So you think,
why is it being made?
I'm not saying you're wrong. So you think Israel is fear-mongering and there is no danger of missiles striking Europe? Again, you might be right. I don't know, sport. I'm just asking you.
I think here two things can be true at the same time. I think Israel is fear-mongering, but I do believe that there is danger. The presence of danger does not eliminate the fear-mongering that Israel and the US is trying to communicate.
Interesting take on it, David. Thank you. We'll have more on this the other side of the 9:15 LBC News headlines. Dominic Ellis.
The Prime Minister says anti-Semitism has no place in our society after four Jewish community ambulances were set on fire in North London. Keir Starmer is preparing to lead a COBRA meeting to discuss the economic impact of the conflict in Iran. And major changes to short-term prison sentences have come into force in England and Wales. LBC weather, sunny spells for large parts of England and Wales. Outbreaks of rain for the north of Scotland, a high of 15 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. The A40 is closed both ways between the Northern Roundabout and the Marylebone Flyover. It's for the ongoing works and there are severe delays both ways. Lots of traffic's using the A4 instead, so that's extremely busy eastbound from the Chiswick Roundabout to Earls Court. Also, one lane was closed on the M4 eastbound at the Heston Services after a car was on fire. That has now reopened, but there are still lengthy delays on the approach. Also on the motorways, there are queues on the M25 clockwise from Junction 9 at Leatherhead to 10 at the A3. That's because of vans broken down. And also on the M25, there are clockwise queues to Junction 30 at the A13 because a lorry's broken down. And on the underground, there are minor delays on the Jubilee line.
This is LBC.
Hi, I'm Sava, founder of Cool You, the daddy of air conditioning. For over 15 years, Cool You have specialised in installing our fully internal aircon systems throughout London with no mess, no fuss, and no external condenser. And from April the 10th to the 19th, come and meet me and the team at the Ideal Home Show, London Olympia. Daddy, daddy cool. Cool You for a cool, comfortable home.
Call Nick Ferrari now, 0345 6060 973, LBC.
Check you're on track for a happy retirement with PensionBee's easy-to-use app. Because when your pension is in a good place, you're in a good place. When investing, your capital is at risk.
It's not easy being a clamp, stuck on the wheel of the one person on the street who didn't tax their car. Yeah, Graham at number 7, I'm talking about you. Bet the neighbourhood group chat is as well. Wish I had a group chat. Maybe I can chat to myself.
Hi, Clampy. How's it going?
Not great, Clampy. Being clamped to the only untaxed car for miles is so lonely.
Over 98% of drivers tax their vehicle on time. Tax it. Don't risk it. Visit gov.uk/DVLA/taxit.
Jay here knows that Zoopla can provide valuations for any home in the UK, so we can see what that new couple across the road might have paid.
Ooh la la.
Have a nose at what the curtain twitchers next door could sell for. And even see what his own place is worth.
Cool, look at that.
Plus, Zoopla lets you find and compare local estate agents if you do decide to sell up. Think of all those new neighbours you'll be able to snoop on, Jay. If you want to know, just ask Zoopla.
Go from bucket list to booked with EasyJet. Get package holidays from £319 per person and flights from £32 one way. So stop dreaming, stop scrolling, stop umming and ahhing. Book now at EasyJet.com and get your holiday sorted today. Get out there. Selected dates and flights April to September. Limited availability. Holidays after protected. T's and C's apply.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
Coming to you, Robert, you'll be the next caller. Whose word should we take? Albert says, missiles reaching England, another lie by Israel causing fear in the minds of right-thinking people. Abdul says, liar, they want to drag us into this war. Only fools would believe us. Same subject, this comes from Steve. I don't trust the IDF. They're trying to manipulate Europe into the war with Iran to take the pressure off Trump. Don't let ourselves be pushed into this. Now, on the subject of the Environment Secretary, John in Hartlepool, do you think perhaps our Foreign Secretary or Defence Secretary might be a bit busy? You should need to be more open-minded, Nick. Don't side with the war criminals. Well, John, I'm sure they are busy, and I don't know that they could necessarily do the entire media round, but just doing it with, obviously, I'm going to say LBC or Sky News or the BBC, I think we need to hear from the Defence Secretary and or the Prime Minister, particularly as, and I'm going to use this military expression, British assets, or I would call them bases, are under attack. We have a right to know. And to hear from the Housing Secretary, I'm sorry, I don't expect the Defence Secretary to spend his entire morning being driven around from studio to studio, but I'm sorry, what they call a pool clip, yes, I do think that should happen. Now, never mind the Housing Secretary, let's move on to whether we take the Israel line, which a lot of you are saying lies, is a lie and just designed to drag us into further support. Or is it a reality about Iranian capabilities? Robert's in Brixton. Which way do you call it, Robert? Good morning.
Yeah, I mean, I think factually Israel was right. And the government used delaying tactics.
Why would they do that, sir?
Well, I think right the way along, we see that the PM is not a leader instinctively. And I think they fall back so they can get their script right and they can decide what other nations are doing, and then they fall in. And there's a pattern of that coming in.
You may well be right, but then when they hear that, it started with the Wall Street Journal online, then it's on CNN. Doesn't a call then go to Sakir, look, sir, just to let you know, we've got a bit of a world of pain here because it's now on the telly. We need to say something. Well, surely that they start thinking then, don't they?
They do. And so I spent a long time, 45 years in the military. I must do a big shout out for you guys, Vanessa, Eddie Kidd, and Tony Blackman, the likes that always support our charities. They
Not
do amazingly.
Not
so,
well done.
Yeah, but I think it's that, I think instinctively they're all frightened of their own shadow to go on and tell it how it is.
45 years in the military. We're talking about Kidd. Was it the same under, I don't know who you served under, Cameron or Brown or Blair? Is there always this kind of split between the reality as you blokes and women see it on the ground and what you see politicians saying? Or do you think it's even more acute now, Robert?
It's more acute now. I think they were a lot more decisive. And we used to have the saying, you know, you're saying that, you know, you don't see the ministers doing the news rounds. Mm. I mean, whether they're having a Lord Lucan syndrome or we used to have a saying, lions led by donkeys.
Yes.
And, you know, I think it's just that, you know, whether it's inexperience, confidence, just to come on and say, yeah, there was a strike. We've got it under control. And that's it. You know, but it's always 2-3 days late, isn't it? And mainly falling in with, you know, other nations, like sending the battleships and what have you. Let's see what everyone else does.
All right.
And then we'll fall in line. But we are where we are.
Okay, thank you. And thank you for all your service. Grateful for your call. Joe's in North Ayrshire. Joe, you're on the radio. Good morning.
Oh, good morning, Nick. Hi there.
Yes.
I think it's really important to give everyone, you know, sort of all sides. And I'm obviously not sticking up for Iran at all here. But
right.
Iran have denied attacking Diego Garcia with missiles. They have denied it.
Right.
And I don't know why nobody is mentioning that. They're you know, going on about what Israel says, what America says. But we need to do all sides on this.
Sorry, say again, Joe, the last bit of that, sorry.
We need to cover all sides on this. Iran has denied this, so why is that not being covered? Why is no one mentioning that?
But do you believe the Iranian denials?
Well, that's kind of irrelevant. I think we need to all sides it. And if they had done it, surely they would be showing off about it, saying, oh, you know, look how great we are, look how far our missiles go now, aren't you scared? But they're actually denying it, and they're denying that they have missiles that do go that far. I'm not saying whether that's true or not, what I'm saying is that you need to give people the full information. And if I might just also add to that, they also say that they have not closed the Straits of Hormuz. The Straits of Hormuz are open to non-enemies. And if you actually go on, because you've got to get to original sources, and there is an Iranian, you know, news outlet where...
Well, it's who you believe, whether you believe, Joe, the United Kingdom, France, Germany, Italy, Spain, United States, Israel, Shell, BP, Texaco, Chevron, Esso, British Gas and other companies, or Tehran? Joe?
I don't think that's the point here. I think...
Well, you just questioned... You just suggested that the Strait of Hormuz is not shut. You can look at graphics of traffic of the ships that travel through on a normal day, and they're not travelling through in anything.
So
it's down to approximately 20%. So, I mean, I hate to say this, Joe, but you're just plain wrong.
No, it's open to non-enemies, and they're open to negotiations.
Well, that means it's not open. That means it's partially closed or partially restricted.
Yeah, I'm not saying whether it's wrong or right. I'm just saying that you need to give people the full picture of what Iran is saying as well, as other countries are saying. Otherwise, people get a distorted view. I mean, there is an article on the Iranian website where about their ambassador speaking to Yvette Coupin and saying, you know, we're only closing it to enemies. Well,
but that is a closure.
Closing it.
But that is a closure.
No, I agree with you. But what I'm saying is we're not hearing that information from the Iranian side. I guess it, you know, people lie, countries lie. Look at, I mean, look how much Trump lies every day. Every time he opens his mouth, he lies.
Yes.
The point is not to allow people to, we just need to be given the information so we can make up our minds and have that array of information to put it into the mix to understand the fuller situation.
All right, Joe, thank you. Again, I would treat with a certain... you're right, sometimes what you have to hear from Donald Trump, you have to treat with extreme caution, but certainly I'd treat with caution what you hear from Tehran. Let's take another call. Steve's in Chester. Steve, you're on the radio. Good morning.
Oh, good morning.
Yes, your view.
Yeah, this point about should we or shouldn't we be kept up in a blow-by-blow account of exactly what's happened regarding where missiles are going. The last caller but one, I'm in the forces for 45 years, I'm fairly sure that he wasn't in the intelligence services as I was. You just don't give out information that will help an enemy. You just don't. World War II, I know this is trivial compared with World War II, by an order of magnitude or five, but the threat to London from the German V weapons, the V1, the V2, that was largely negated by clever counterintelligence. You know, the newspapers didn't say where the bombs hit.
Right.
They lied and said other things, and therefore the Germans redirected their targeting.
We're not at war.
Landed in fields.
But we're not.
But letting, you're right. You're helping out with the notion that we might be at some point attacked by Iranian missiles.
Steve, I need to cross because the last few moments the Prime Minister has been speaking. Firstly, addressing the upcoming Cobra meeting. Then he gets on. Steve, we'll come back to you. But the anti-Semitic attack, believed to be anti-Semitic attack on the streets of London. Let's go to what the Prime Minister have been saying.
Obviously, cobras are usually used for sort of military considerations, consular considerations, but I think with the Iran war, most people are very concerned now, not only what they're seeing on their screens in relation to the conflict itself, but also that question of how's it going to affect me and my family. And so today we're looking at the economic impact. And I am asking for every lever that's available to the government to deal with the cost of living to be discussed at Cobra. Hence, we've got the Bank of England and others there. But I want to make sure that when it comes to the cost of living, we're doing everything we possibly can at a very difficult period like this.
Okay. Elsewhere today, four ambulances belonging to the Jewish Emergency Service have been attacked or set on fire in an attack on a London synagogue. Do you have any comment on this appalling attack? And have police found or caught the perpetrators?
Well, this is a horrific anti-Semitic attack. And, of course, my thoughts, I think all of our thoughts, will be with those in the vicinity, the residents who are understandably very concerned, a Jewish community across the country deeply concerned. I've already been in touch with community leaders this morning and will continue to do so during the day. But anti-Semitism has no place in our society, and it's really important that we all stand together at a moment like this.
And just finally, on the issue on the war in Iran, how safe are we from Iranian missiles if two were fired at the Chagos Islands, as we now know? How close did one get? Why keep this a secret, as some say? And how was your call last night with Donald Trump?
Well, no missiles hit the Chagos Islands, as you know. There were two heading in that direction. And it's really important that we call out these reckless acts by Iran against British interests, British lives, against our allies in the Gulf region. And that is why we're standing with our allies. That's why my number one concern is protecting British interests and British lives. That's why we've got a defensive action going on in the region, and we will continue to do so. But these are reckless acts, and we need to do everything we can, and we will do everything we can to protect our interests and our lives.
And are we in range here?
I'm sorry?
Are we in range here for missiles?
Well, look, we carry out assessments all the time in order to keep us safe, and there's no assessment that we're being targeted in that way at all. But, of course, it's my job to ensure that British interests, British lives are always uppermost in my mind. What we need here is de-escalation. We need, and that's why we had a statement from a number of countries last week about what we need to do about the Straits of Hormuz, which obviously needs careful coordination and a viable plan. But it's very important we defend our interests, we defend British lives, but without getting dragged into the war. And that's the clear divide I've put in place. Yes, defend our interests, defend British lives. No, not get dragged into the war.
Sir Keir Starmer, thank you.
The Prime Minister speaking earlier this morning. Stephen, back to you. Sorry, so final point. Steve, you were talking about World War II. I do think this is notably different when you've got online evidence and you've got a TV station reporting it, and we've still got absolute nothing from the government. Steve, quick one from you, and then we have to get to news, sir.
Yeah, I'd largely agree with you about the times, but the fact of the matter is that just because foreign news organisations are reporting something doesn't mean that it should be confirmed or denied by us.
But isn't that the reality of a conflict in 2026 as opposed to
1945? Not necessarily. I mean, think it is, but the stuff on the net doesn't necessarily carry the stamp of truth now, does it?
No, but you've got to reassure a public, haven't you, that are concerned. If they're reading that missiles could hit London, I think your first duty... Well, I know your first duty.
Yeah, well, I'm talking... the fact of the matter is that our intelligence services may or may not know the exact capabilities of these weapons or where they might be launched from. Certainly, there's plenty of other ways of attacking London or any other UK city other than by missiles, plenty of others.
Steve, thanks for hanging on the line. We're a little bit late because of the Prime Minister. It's 9:31. Breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari, on LBC The News, Dominic Ellis.
The Prime Minister says anti-Semitism has no place in our society after four Jewish community ambulances were set on fire in North London. Police are treating the attack in Golders Green overnight as a suspected hate crime. Cost of living pressures driven by the conflict in the Middle East will be discussed at an emergency government COBRA meeting later. Sir Keir Starmer, Cabinet Ministers and the Governor of the Bank of England are due to meet this afternoon. And changes to short-term prison sentences have come into force in an effort to ease overcrowding in England and Wales. It means most offenders that would have received up to a year in prison will instead receive a suspended sentence. LBC weather, sunny spells for large parts of England and Wales. Some outbreaks of rain for the north of Scotland. A high of 15 degrees.
This is LBC.
A lot of legal decisions in this country are made by magistrates. Volunteers, like you and me. Working as a team to make decisions on cases in criminal or family courts with support from legal advisors. You don't need specific qualifications or experience. I'm an electrician myself, but you could be anything. A teacher, a delivery driver, unemployed. With ongoing support, you'll learn new skills, enjoy new challenges, and help create positive change for your community. Volunteer at icanbeamagistrate.co.uk.
Flight number, memorised. Bag, weighed one too many times. And phone fully charged. One thing you forgot, though. Where to park the car?
Well, we've got you covered. At Skypark Secure, every airport car park is vetted, so there's less for you to worry about. So if you're travelling through Gatwick, Luton, or a UK airport soon, start your trip stress-free, knowing your parking's taken care of. It's why we have 18,000 five-star reviews on FIFO. Compare your airport parking with confidence. Book now at skyparksecure.com.
This Easter at M&S, you'll find a selection of the yummiest chocolate animals. There's Hiccup the Hippo with his darling chubby little legs. And Sunny the Sloth, beaming with his milk and white chocolate features. Toby the T-Rex, who's a bit green, bit scary, but charming at the same time. And Ralph the Cavapoo. I almost don't want to bite his scrumptious little nose right off, but I will. All of these cuties for just £7 each. This is not just food, this is M&S food. Selected stores.
Tax it.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
Let's come back to this question. Did the British government move as swiftly as it could have done? They did come after CNN, after the Wall Street Journal Online, and after two other nation's military departments. But you heard the Prime Minister, what, within the last 5 minutes or so? John's in Enfield. John, your take on this. Morning.
Oh, hello, Nick. Yeah,
hello.
With the claim from the IDF, you know, about this ballistic missile
being able to hit possibly London.
Yeah. Okay, I could have been dubious, but now, if you think about it, the delay, the government has actually confirmed what the Israelis are saying. Yeah,
and he said they carry out continual assessments. If you remember, the last question was, "Are we safe?" or words to that effect, and he said there was nothing to indicate that there was an assessment that we're not.
Well, is he saying we've got an iron dome system over here, Nick?
No. I think he will say my sense is he is supporting the line that was put out by his senior colleague Steve Reed yesterday. There is no active assessment, as they call it. There's no intelligence, let's use that word, that the Iranians possess a missile that could get that far, is the bottom line.
He's putting it in English. The government confirmed, right, that there have been two strikes towards the Chagos Islands.
Yes.
So they've confirmed that Iran has got ballistic capability. That's a fact.
Yeah. The furthest anyone has travelled is 1,990 miles. You've got to do 2,700 to get to London.
And from what I gather, the Russians were helping the Iranians develop the ballistic missiles. God knows if in 5 years' time this happened, as opposed to just the Middle East, they will be striking out. But, Nick, I just want to get to another point. I think that if we agree, right, that the Iranians have struck, would you agree the Chagos Island is a British sovereign nation now? Yeah? And they've confirmed that, yeah? Would you agree?
It's sovereign territory, yes. Yeah. I don't think it's our nation, but it's sovereign territory.
Right now that they've struck a sovereign territory, why have they still not banned the IRGC? Why are we the only country in the world that is waving in, right, the IRGC?
I can't answer this. It seems nuts to me.
It's a treacherous act, Nick. And you know what I think it comes down to? You've got to look at Iran is critical to China because they're building a bridgehead there, the Belt and Road. I think Starmer doesn't want to annoy his Chinese chums. That's why he doesn't want to get dragged into this war.
All right. We're going out on quite a level there, which, in truth, you and I have no knowledge. I have no idea of Sir Keir Starmer's views towards China, the Chinese authorities, the Chinese relationship with Iran. But thank you for your points on the other matter. John, we must move on to get other people involved and, indeed, to cover other stories. And one that found itself on the front page of two of your newspapers yesterday. The idea that the former Duchess of York, Sarah Ferguson, was involved in talks to clone the late Queen's corgi dogs for a reality show. Described by Hollywood as a bold and controversial business venture, close quotes, the idea would have involved the former Duchess of York trying to make money by selling the genetically replicated dog corgi dogs to other dog lovers around the world. Now, the dogs typically, this is extraordinary, it can be these dogs selling for up to £75,000 in the US if you could say that it was a corgi. I suppose it would actually, from the Queen of England, as they would say over there. One of the Queen of England's corgis, you probably would pay £75,000. May 2023, Fergie, Duchess of York, was seeking ways to leverage what little remained of her royal status when the idea of monetizing Muick and Sandy was floated. She was entrusted with their care following the Queen's death 8 months ahead prior to that. It's reported she spoke to a number of TV companies in the US and met executives in Los Angeles for a series of lunches and dinners. Okay, well, whether that did or did not happen, probably only a few handful of people know, but the reality of cloning dogs... Anna Webb is a dog behaviour and nutrition expert and hosts a Dog's Life podcast and joins me now. Let's talk a little bit about dog cloning, if we might, Anna. How common is it? How easy is it? How is it done? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Thanks for having me on. Okay, well, it's quite difficult to get it done. We're not allowed to do it in the UK, although there is a cloning laboratory up in Shropshire, actually, where they're doing research. Lots of people have cloned their dogs in America and all over. The problem I have with it is that you have to think, is this really ethical? Is this really fair to, you know, the dog that you're cloning? You can clone a dog simply by getting some DNA 5 days after it's died, and I'm not totally sure of the complete process, and eggs fertilized, whatever, and then there's a surrogate mother, and it gives birth to an identical copy of your deceased dog. However, you know, is it really going to have the same personality? That's really debatable, as so much goes into creating a personality of a dog, where you're living, who's around the dog, what you do with the dog, you know, training, what you feed your dog. So, for me, you know, we all go through the life stages with our dogs. My own dogs are old now. You know, I know what's coming down the line. I'm dreading it. I'm pre-grieving them. But would I clone them? You know, well, I don't have the budget, to be honest, anyway, to clone a dog. I'd rather adopt a dog from a rescue and give them a good home.
Do we know how much it costs to clone? We can see that the Queen of England's dog is going to cost you £75,000, but do we know how much it costs to actually clone a dog?
About the same amount, Nick. It's a huge amount of money. Yeah, you're talking tens of thousands. I think it's about 50,000. So, so it's a lot of money when you think there are lots of dogs needing homes at the moment. They're being abandoned left, right and centre down to the cost of living crisis and other factors. So I think we have to be quite pragmatic, you know, and honour our dogs that pass and think, right, let's do the hair of the dog cure that my dad always used to say has nothing to do with hangovers, but with, you know, fixing a broken heart.
Yes. OK, so lastly, you said, Anna, it's not legal practice here, but it can be in the United States. I suppose there, if you've got some incredibly rich individual couple and they absolutely adored their German shepherd called Bob, whatever it was, and they cannot cope without Bob, the magic, they want Bob's offspring, so they will spend a gazillion dollars to get the son or daughter of Bob, effectively.
Yeah, exactly that. But, you know, are you really getting Bob back? That's the question. And, you know, on this question also, Sarah Ferguson in this issue, you know, Sandy and Muick, I would just like to point out, they are not from the Queen's original bloodline of corgis. So her bloodline of corgis, I believe the late Queen stopped breeding them in about 2015. So it's arguable they're not the Queen's corgis.
Grateful for your input. Anna Webb, thank you. You're a dog behaviour and nutrition expert. You host the podcast A Dog's Life. A Dog's Life podcast, Anna Webb. Let's come back to more of your calls concerning what appears to be now so much a conflict of briefing. It's more a conflict, it's a delay over when the Ministry of Defence, the British government, chose to make us aware of exactly what was or what was not going on. Mark's in Sandy. Who are you going to believe, Mark? Good morning.
Hi, Nick. Good morning. Yeah, well, from a drummer's point of view, what I would say is that when people demonise Mossad or the IDF or whatever and mistrust it, they have to bear in mind that some of the people that might have been saying death to the IDF could have been on a train or a bus, and the Mossad had passed on information to MI5, MI6 for many, many years now to help thwart many terrorist attacks, which have been stopped by British intelligence, but because of the intel they've had from Mossad. So I think people have to sort of, like you said before, separate what's happened or the rights, the wrongs, or whatever mistakes have been made in the war in Gaza, but separate it for God's sakes, because at the end of the day, you can't block a punch once it's landed. And I think it's important to take notice of it. And it's not as if the Iranian regime is inert. It's already carried out many attacks in countries over the world. And even if you just look back to what happened to Salman Rushdie people just need to
You mean
to
the attack attack where he was blinded, just to clarify? Is that what you mean in the United States?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, of course, yeah. And they've, blinded they've got, one eye, I should say. Yeah, go ahead, yeah.
Yeah, they've got a long reach. So, you know, I'm not a fan of Netanyahu. I don't think everything Trump does is fantastic either. But Trump, Netanyahu will be gone. But that regime having the nuclear capability that it was heading to, which is like, what is it, 60% enrichment, that's not for peaceful means. And when someone's threatening to, you know, duff you in, you take it seriously. But I think the UK is a threat. And if not from a ballistic missile, the fact that they could get so close to Chagos or actually hit Cyprus, I think the government needs to stop pussyfooting around.
And did we, lastly on this, did the British public deserve to hear this from the Ministry of Defence or a government minister rather than from Wall Street Journal Online?
I think first of all, that they should have had the Ministry of Defence or someone from MI6 speak. Now, they can still speak in guarded terms. They don't have to give away too much. But it is pretty poor when, you know, people hear it firsthand from the media. And then, you know, you end up with a politician coming on and actually sounding a bit lily-livered on it and actually not really saying anything, just... Well, behind sort of blah blah talk.
Well, that's it. And we're all I'm not saying that it's not an important job. It is to try and build 1.5 million houses in the lifetime of this parliament. But quite why you put your housing secretary out on such a day, I don't really understand. Mark, thank you. We'll have more calls on that. But let's come back to matters at home. And as we told you right at the top of the show, there's been an arson attack. And you've been hearing on LBC News Bulletin. There's been an arson attack on four ambulances belonging to a Jewish community ambulance service in North London, Hatzolah Ambulances, and this has been referenced by the Prime Minister, Sir Keir Starmer, speaking in the last hour.
Anti-Semitism has no place in our society, and it's really important that we all stand together at a moment like this.
Well, that's obviously right, Sir Keir, and those are important words, but what's actually being done to back that up? And again, if you are Jewish living in this country and you see this attack, And it's clearly targeted. This is an anti-Semitic attack, quite clearly. No question about it. Do the words of the Prime Minister give you anything more than just a degree of comfort? Not security, I would imagine. We'll have more on that after this. 9:45, LBC News Headlines then. Dominic Ellis.
Police are searching for three suspects after four ambulances belonging to the Jewish community were set on fire in North London. Iran's warned it'll completely close the Strait of Hormuz if President Trump carries out his threat to attack the country's power stations. And cost of living pressures driven by the conflict in the Middle East will be discussed at an emergency COBRA meeting later. LBC weather, sunny spells for large parts of England and Wales, some outbreaks of rain for the north of Scotland, a high of 15 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. The A40 remains closed in both directions between the Northern Roundabout and the Marylebone Flyover for the ongoing works. There are severe delays both ways, also lengthy delays as a result on the A4 eastbound heading into Earl's Court. It's much busier than usual, especially over the Hammersmith Flyover. Now elsewhere, there are delays on the M25 clockwise from Junction 9 at Leatherhead to 10 at the A3 after a van broke down earlier. Also on the M25, there are delays clockwise to Junction 30 at the A3. And that's because a lorry has broken down. On the trains, Great Northern and Thames Link can't stop at Finsbury Park Station. That's because of an investigation, and there are minor delays on the Jubilee and Central lines.
Coming up at 10 on LBC, James O'Brien.
I don't know why we bothered getting the Chilcot checklist laminated, because nobody else in the British media seems to be using it. And how do you get white working class boys to do better at school?
James O'Brien at 10. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
The all-new, all-electric Toyota CHR Plus. Sleek, stylish and quietly reliable. Available with 0% APR representative with £1,500 deposit contribution and save £1,500 with the electric car grant. Get that Toyota electric feeling. Visit your nearest Toyota centre. Price from £34,495. Available on Toyota PCP when financed through Toyota Financial Services by 30th of June 2026. Optional final payment. Indemnities may be required. See website. T's and C's apply.
This is LBC. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app. Download it now from your app store.
Search Kayak for great deals on Wait, that doesn't say flights. Search Kayak for great deals on car hire? Huh. With Kayak, you can compare hundreds of car rental sites to find great deals. Even better, you see costs up front. And if it's flexibility you're after, Kayak's got a handy free cancellation filter. Lovely stuff. So next time you're searching for car hire, at home or for your holes, search Kayak and go see for yourself.
At AJ Bell, we believe investing is for everyone. And when we say everyone, we mean your dad, Dan, Danielle, Dean, Dave, Dale, Dale's delivery driver Denise, Denise's dentist Dinesh, and Devon's strongest man, Donathan. Donathan? Donathan, that can't be right. Donathan? Well, whatever your name is. If you're a real person, investing is for you too. AJ Bell, feel good investing. The value of your investments can go up or down.
What's the best present you ever got for your birthday? I bet it wasn't as life-changing as £1 million. Every week with the birthday draw, there's £1 million to be won. And you can enter from as little as £1 or via post. Enter by midnight on Sunday and your special day could win you £1 million. Visit thebirthdaydraw.com. Is it your lucky day? From Global and ITV. 18 plus UK only, no purchase necessary.
My name is Kathleen, and this is my NHS story. Having a persistent cough is quite socially embarrassing, so I went to see a respiratory nurse who sent me off for an X-ray at my local CDC, and they were offering Sunday appointments and evening appointments, which was great.
The government is opening new community diagnostic centres, with many already available 12 hours a day, 7 days a week, so the NHS can be there for all of us when we need it. Find your closest one at gov.uk/NHS Fit for the Future. Available England-wide.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
Let's go back to that story which we featured in the first hour and has been addressed by the Prime Minister earlier in this hour. An arson attack on four ambulances belonging to the Jewish Community Ambulance Service. Hazaz Olar, if I'm saying that correctly. The Prime Minister earlier this hour.
Well, this is a horrific anti-Semitic attack. And, of course, my thoughts, I think all of our thoughts, will be with those in the vicinity, the residents who are understandably very concerned, a Jewish community across the country deeply concerned. I've already been in touch with community leaders this morning and will continue to do so during the day. But anti-Semitism has no place in our society, and it's really important that we all stand together at a moment like this.
I don't quite know what that actually means, but I'm sure he does mean it. But the reality for you. Now, this service has served the North London community of Golders Green since 1979. Houses had to be evacuated as a precaution. The fire brigade reporting multiple cylinders in the vehicles exploded. Well, you can imagine that, couldn't you, when you think of the kit that's in an ambulance, causing windows to shatter in an adjacent block of flats. 6 fire engines, 40 firefighters were sent to the fire, brought under control in the early hours of this morning. The police reporting that they're looking for 3 suspects at this, quote, early stage. Paul is in Golders Green. Were you there this morning? Good morning. Hello.
Good morning, yes. I was the one the first on scene last night. Mm-hmm. There was a real panic and fear there. Explosions were going off. People were genuinely shaken. This wasn't just mindless vandalism. This was premeditated.
Let's just back up a little. How did you find out about it, Paul?
I'm part of a community help group, and it came through as a Mayday call on our system, so I attended.
Okay.
I was there as the first explosion went off, and there was panic because there were large residential blocks near it, and windows were being blown out.
Are the ambulances parked in like a small depot or a small yard? Where are they actually located, Paul?
There's actually a synagogue, and right next to the synagogue there's like a car park sort of specifically for the ambulances, and they've been there ever since I remember, so they've been there for a very long time.
How do they work? I mean, normally, are they manned 24 hours a day?
24 hours, yeah. So the way that sort of works is there's a 24-hour-a-day service, emergency service. The NHS is very stretched, and so that sort of bridges that gap where if, you know, someone isn't emergency situation, they will attend normally within 1 to 2 minutes, and they cover the whole Golders Green, Hampstead and Hendon. So they cover quite a large area.
How many vehicles are on the fleet in total?
I'm aware there's 6 actual vans.
Right.
But they've also got 4 fast response cars.
Right, okay. So those cars were probably out, and the other 2 ambulances would have been out on patrol or on call or whatever it might have been.
They were either on call or at another base they have. They have another base where they keep some vehicles too.
How does this work? Do they have the full powers of an ambulance? That is to say they're able to drive at speed and through traffic lights and whatever else it might be?
Sort of our full legal ambulance service under the CQC and have the just like every other ambulance part of the NHS, they are a regular ambulance service and completely privately funded by the community.
What time did you get there this morning, roughly, Paul?
1:54.
Oh, okay, 1:54. And, sorry, did you say the first explosion had taken place or it took place when you got there?
It took place as I was arriving.
And so the
event I saw the roof of an ambulance just shoot up into there.
Right. Locals, I understand it's quite near some flats, a block of apartments. Is that correct?
Many apartment blocks. I mean, we're talking about within the vicinity, I can name 6 apartment blocks, which has got housing, young families. We personally were involved in evacuating elderly people down flights of stairs into a special Jewish community centre where we put them up, we gave them coffee, warm blanket, we made sure they were taken care of until further help arrived.
But Paul, are you able to say, have these flats sustained any damage outside of shattered windows? Has anything else happened?
What we're aware of is shattered windows, so mainly shattered windows have damage. There is obviously damage, per se, to the area around the synagogues also had damage to it.
Well, I was going to say, presumably the windows of the synagogue are shattered as well, are they?
Yeah.
And nothing left of the ambulances?
Unfortunately, I don't know if you've seen the pictures, Nick, but they have worked fairly worse for wear. Mm. It's a very, very sad. And to target that in the heart of Golders Green is sick and cowardly. It's an attack on the whole community. And I believe there must be zero tolerance for this, and the responsible must be found fast and brought to justice. Because when ambulances become targets, that is not just criminality, that is society losing its moral compass.
You heard the words of the... Hopefully, just before I came to you, you heard what the Prime Minister said, that attacks like this shouldn't be tolerated, which, of course, we all agree with. But is he saying enough? Does he need to do more? You're up there. You're with the Jewish people in North London. What would you say?
words are very cheap. We've heard it all before. Unfortunately, when you play on both sides and you make terrorism something that has a place in this country, then you can't say it's all okay. And we really feel for you because they've lost faith.
Sorry, I don't understand. I appreciate you've been up all morning. When you say you make terrorism part of the United Kingdom, sorry, just elaborate on that, Paul. I'm not quite clear what you're saying.
Look what goes on in central London on the most weekends and how they're like have the marchers and all that. That just encourages further hate, further terrorism. And these are terrorists. There's no way out about it. There's no way about it. A police officer told me last night, we are treating this like a terrorist incident. So this is very, very clear what's gone on and what's happening. The Prime Minister can talk. Words are very cheap, very cheap.
Yes.
But ultimately, actions, when you ban these marches, when you stop the hate, when anti-Semitism rears its ugly head, what are you doing about it? What are you doing to...
So this, lastly, Paul, and you must get some sleep because you've been working, this is the manifestation, then, of what we see by some of those people who attend those demonstrations at the weekend, is what you're saying.
I think it's more than that, is that the UK population are amazing, very pro, very... We live together with them, absolutely no problem. The issue you find is when that sect, the hate sect, and that comes in, and that's where you'll find that this rears its ugly head once again. And in reality, while that's allowed to happen, you won't have the answers we're looking for.
You look after yourself, Paul. Thank you for the report, having got there so early in the morning. In fact, as the first explosion went off, and I've just seen some video photographs of well, there's nothing left of three of the ambulances, a sort of burnt out shell of one, effectively. Paul, thank you. We've got a minute and a bit. Let's get one more call in on Diego Garcia and what we now know to be the attempted strikes from Tehran. Freddie in Edgeworth, thank you for hanging on the line. Freddie, briefly, your point that you want to make. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hello, sir.
Good morning. Let's forget about how far the Israelis come to London or not. We know they come to Israel. Now, we know as well that the regime in Iran wants to develop a weapon, a nuclear weapon, and they will use it at the first instance on Israel. What would be the reaction of the government here or your listeners to Israel being hit with a nuclear weapon?
Well, you tell me what you think the reaction would be.
Well, nothing.
Well, the government would call
nothing.
It out, but too
good riddance.
The government would say it's an outrage, but do nothing. They would just say words, I sense. That's all you'd get from the government.
Exactly. But do they know? Do they know that they are next?
Do they know what the United Kingdom is next?
Yes.
What makes you say that? How can you say that with such certainty, Freddie?
I was born next door. I was born next door to Iran. I know the regime. I know the regime in Iraq. I know the regime everywhere in there. I was born and I lived there for 17 years.
You lived in Iran?
That's the mentality. It's not Israel. It's not just Israel.
Right. You lived in Iran for 17 years.
I lived in Iraq.
You lived in Iraq. I'm so sorry. Sorry.
Yes.
So what is, do you believe, Tehran's ultimate aim with the United Kingdom and perhaps other parts of Europe? What's their ultimate
spread
goal?
Spread their mentality. Spread the mentality that the Mahdi will arrive. The Mahdi will only arrive when they organize, when they spread it around the world.
Freddie, I'm going to finish there only for time reasons. Thank you. You had the last word on a very busy day, and I sense there's more to come out about that attack on those ambulances as well. Apologies if you didn't get through, but the talking continues with James O'Brien. If you missed any of the show, listen back on our free Global Player app or the LBC app, where you can stay up to date with all the latest news, videos and opinions. Download the official LBC app for free from your app store now. That's it for today. James O'Brien, as I say, the other side of the news. I'm back with you tomorrow morning from 7. Meantime, stay safe.
Thank you, Nick. The time is approaching 10 o'clock. It's always tempting, isn't it? And sometimes I think it's true. To poo-poo the notion of inquiries. We seem to have inquiries into everything in this country. And because we're a cynical bunch and perhaps not brilliantly served by most of our media. Today, of course, being a wonderful example of that. Wait till you hear what Kemi Badenoch is angry about. We don't notice the results of the inquiries. We don't properly clock the ones that matter. Is there a more important inquiry in recent years, COVID exempt, than the Chilcot inquiry? Years and millions of pounds spent on ensuring that we don't wade illegally into ludicrous Middle Eastern engagements again? I don't think there is. So why on earth are more people not noting its findings?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, police are searching for three suspects after four ambulances belonging to the Jewish community were set on fire in North London. Officers are treating the attack in Golders Green overnight as a hate crime. The vehicles were set alight, causing cylinders inside to explode and windows in nearby homes to break. Sir Keir Starmer has been giving his reaction.
This is a horrific anti-Semitic attack. My thoughts, I think all of our thoughts, will be with those in the vicinity, the residents who are understandably very concerned, a Jewish community across the country deeply concerned. Anti-Semitism has no place in our society, and it's really important that we all stand together at a moment like this.
Separately, the Prime Minister says every lever will be pulled to help with cost of living pressures as a result of the Iran war. Sir Keir Starmer is to chair an emergency COBRA meeting later to address the economic impact of the conflict. Iran has warned that it'll completely close the Strait of Hormuz if President Trump attacks the country's power stations. Donald Trump has threatened to obliterate the sites unless Tehran reopens the global shipping route tonight. Defence analyst Colonel Simon Diggins has told LBC Donald Trump's strategy is extremely risky.
There is an element of gamble about what he's been doing, and I think the kind of bold threats with very hard deadlines probably don't help anybody, because you didn't get a toxic reaction back. People basically, and they're playing each other now rather than the game. And I think that's very hard for everybody to work out, therefore, what is the way forward.
A pilot and co-pilot of a plane have been killed in a collision at New York's LaGuardia Airport. The Air Canada plane had just landed when it collided with a fire engine. All flights at the airport have been suspended. Scotland has become the first part of the UK to test babies for spinal muscular atrophy. The rare genetic condition affects around 70 babies in the UK every year and causes progressive muscle weakness. And seven locations have been chosen for new towns in England. At least 10,000 homes will be built in places including South Gloucestershire and Manchester. Ministers have promised that construction work will start before the next election. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 203 points. At 9,714. The pound buys $1.32 and €1.15. LBC weather, sunny spells for large parts of England and Wales through today. Some outbreaks of rain for the north of Scotland. A high of 15 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Way up here, right at the edge of oxygen, in space, that's where you'll find us. O2 Satellite keeps you connected in more places than ever before. So even when you're far from everything, you won't have to miss a thing. Introducing O2 Satellite. O2. Essential for living.
30-day rolling add-on. £3 per month. Device type, app, location and other restrictions apply. See o2.co.uk/terms.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Good morning. 3 minutes after 10 is the time. And, well, flipping heck. It's deja vu all over again, isn't it? We should start beginning the programme with I Got You, Babe by Sonny and Cher, which I don't think you need to be a massive cineast to recognise as a motif most obviously associated with the opening moments of Groundhog Day, or the recurring opening moments of Groundhog Day, the Bill Murray film. Because I how do you do it, do you think? How do you focus on meaningful questions when the man in charge is mad? I think we began last week's program. Did we do, or was it the week before? Pointing out that Donald Trump is a deranged liar, and it makes analysis, it makes prediction almost impossible. So let's just recap briefly, right? This isn't a war. It is an, quote, excursion. A word that has no meaning in the context of what's happening in the Middle East, but the word that Donald Trump has used repeatedly. I think, honestly, because someone used the word incursion in front of him, and he misheard, misunderstood, and carried on regardless. So it isn't a war, it's an excursion, but we have won the war. We have won the war so successfully that we don't need any help. But if people don't send us help, then they will suffer unimaginable punishment if they don't send us the help that we don't need. We certainly don't need aircraft carriers, but my goodness me, if Keir Starmer doesn't send aircraft carriers soon, then I am going to be furious with him, because he's not Winston Churchill. Of course, reports that Donald Trump thinks that Winston Churchill is an insurance company in this country, as opposed to a wartime leader, have neither been confirmed nor denied. So it isn't a war, but we've won it, except we haven't won it, but we don't need any help, except we do need help. Is that about right? Have we got that about right? It isn't a war, but we've won it, and we don't need any help because we've won it, but we better get help soon, otherwise we might not win it. And then you come to the Strait of Hormuz, of course, and the claim that it is not necessary for America to stay in the area, followed within a couple of hours, the claim that it is absolutely necessary to stay in the area. In fact, if Iran don't open the Strait of Hormuz immediately, then he's going to start blowing up power plants. But an hour before that, he made it absolutely clear that they could just leave anyway because they don't get affected by the partial closure of the Strait of Hormuz, so they don't need to worry about it anyway, and maybe they will leave it all to allies or to NATO. So, to recap again, it's not a war, it's an incursion, but we've won the war. We haven't won the war, but we definitely don't need help. We do need help, but we don't need aircraft carriers. We do need aircraft carriers, and you better jolly well send them. The Strait of Hormuz is not a problem for us. We could just leave it and go home now because we've won the war that isn't a war, except that we need to open the Strait of Hormuz, and if our allies don't come and help us soon, then I'll be absolutely furious. And it's 6 minutes after 10. I've only been speaking for 2 or 3 minutes. It's a war, but it's not a war. We've won it, but we haven't won it, but we have won it. We don't need help, but we do need help, but we don't need help. But he's Vicky Pollard. He's Vicky Blooming Pollard, isn't he? Yes, but no, but no, but yes, but yes, but no, but no, but no, but yes, but. So it's a war, but it's not a war. We've won it, but we haven't won it, but we have won it. We don't need help, but we do need help, but we don't need help, but we do need help. Yes, but we do, but we don't. Yes, but we do. The Strait of Hormuz is nothing to do with us, but we're going to have to get it open because it's really important. But we don't need it, but we don't need help, but we do need help, but we need to get it open. These situations are not funny. And yet they kind of are. I don't know how amusing it would be if you had family in the area, anywhere in the area, but they are not funny, these situations, these scenarios are not funny. And yet, we still lack the, what's the word I'm looking for? We still lack the vocabulary, the tools to work our way through it. What's the point of this program? A question you have no doubt asked yourself many, many, many times in the past. I know Keith has. But what is the point of this program? When we routinely, and of course imperfectly and very fallibly, but we routinely take indisputable facts and discuss them. Or if we are discussing disputable facts, we acknowledge the differences and the intersection, if you like, of dispute that must become therefore irrefutable, the things upon which everybody agrees. So if it was sport, you could be passionately supporting one side or the other, but you'd have to agree on what the offside rule was, even if you were disagreeing furiously on whether or not it had just been breached by your player or their player. What do you do when the referee holds up all the cards he's got, blows his whistle and awards a goal all at the same time? What do you do when the referee or the man in charge of the whole game says black is white, up is down, freedom is slavery, ignorance is strength, war is peace? There is a war, but there's not a war. It's an excursion, but we've won it, except we haven't won it, and we don't need help, but we do need help, but we don't need aircraft carriers, but we do need aircraft carriers. Please send aircraft carriers. We don't need any help opening the Strait of Hormuz, but we do need help opening the Strait of Hormuz, and you better send that help, otherwise we'll start bombing power stations, except we don't need to start bombing power stations because we don't actually need the Strait of Hormuz. Only our allies use the Strait of Hormuz. It makes no difference to us. Anyway, it's good if the price of oil goes up because we make lots of money, and pick your way out of that one, people. Pick your way out of that one.